from the high desert and the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be in the world's prolific time zones, every single one of them covered like a blanket by this program, Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell, and I'm an Art Bell with a dilemma tonight that I'll tell you all about. Well, I can't tell you all about it. I'll tell you what I'm going to do about it, though. I've got two really heavyweight guests. I don't know if they're going to be heavyweight in the answers they give or not, but I've got two heavyweight guests coming on the air this evening on, among other things, the subject of HAARP. Now, I have a lot of really serious questions about HAARP. Really serious questions about HAARP. Dr. Joseph Resnick is one of them. He's an applied scientist. Oh, he's long resume. I'll tell you all about it. And Guy Kramer. Both of them here ostensibly or mainly on the subject of HAARP. They hold patents. There are certain patents that I'm told they're not going to be able to talk about. Their appearance here had to be approved at the senatorial level by a senator. There were questions in the way they would answer them, bandied back and forth, and they had to get approval at a senatorial level. Now, so already I know I'm in, we're in for a big, well, a big unknown tonight, because we've got a couple of guys who know a lot more than they're going to be willing to say about something that I really want to know about. So it may not be an easy night. Be forewarned. Big full moon up there, and it feels like it, too. Then the dilemma, if that's not dilemma enough already, right? I got this email earlier with all of these questions and the scripted answers, you know, and I went, oh, man, what are we up to here? And I called Guy Kramer and said, listen, this is talk radio. We don't do scripts, you know. But turns out this was a sort of an approval process at the senatorial level to have them on air at all. Now, obviously, the one thing I don't want to do is I don't want to lose the opportunity to interview them. So I'm going to be a little careful here. I do have a dilemma about Dr. Resnick sent me a piece of information about the bird flu, something I told you I was very serious about last night. And it's a startling bit of information. Now, in the email, he says, please ask AB, that'd be me, to keep the lid on this for the moment. Well, I'm a talk show host. I don't keep lids on. I blow them off. That's what I do. And so here's what I think I'll do. I think I'll hold on to this, and we'll ask about it at the beginning of the interview. And if they won't say anything about it or say they can't, then before the show is over, I'll read it to you anyway. Now, I hope that doesn't lead to the show being over prematurely, if you follow me. We'll see. It's a full moon. It's a tough subject. And if you look at the, just before we get started with the world news, if you'll take a good look at the webcam photograph tonight, the one of me with a couple thumbs up, you know, usual pre-show kind of typical photograph that I took a few minutes ago. Behind me, you will see a very great deal of shortwave equipment. You know I'm a ham operator. I've said it enough times on the show. I'm a very avid ham operator. I've been licensed consecutively since I was 13 years of age, and I'm 59 now. I have some very serious shortwave equipment. I have 5 acres of antenna, unlike any other. Except maybe our friends up in Alaska, HAARP. And I'm telling you, as I have told you in shows of recent weeks, that I'm very disturbed by what's going on in the ionosphere and very aware that something unusual is going on with our ionosphere, something very unusual. Frequencies that have, for all my life, been dependable every night to yield a certain result. Communicating with stations 200, 300, 400 miles away, that's been blown away. That usually ever so reliable ionosphere has just been blown away since September. And one of the possibilities, when you look at the various possibilities of what could be causing this, because the sun certainly has not been, I suppose it's been contributory, in the sense we've had some pretty big flares, but even at times when the sun was not flaring, this unusual, bizarre circumstance on shortwave has been the same. So the sun is not the factor. Something else is at work here. Now, some, I suppose, would screech normal cycles. Well, I've been there, and I've not. There's nothing normal about it to me, or most of the people I've talked to, my colleagues, for example, other hams, people who have been 40 and 50 years, as myself, depending on things being a certain way. They ain't that way anymore, and one of the possibilities is HARP. So it's going to be a serious show. And with the news, we will begin very seriously indeed. I grew up with him. I think many of us grew up with Johnny Carson, and he's gone. Johnny Carson, the quick-witted Tonight Show host who became a national institution, oh, he was, putting his viewers to bed for 30 years with a smooth nightcap of celebrity banter and heartland charm, died Sunday, 79, emphysema. He died early Sunday morning with his family by him. And I will miss him. You know, unlike certain celebrities, like the one sitting in this seat, who have retired a number of times. I mean, look, a lot of people in, I don't know, I guess these kinds of jobs, the broadcast media, sports, I don't know, whatever they do that they do it very well, and they retire, and then, of course, they want to go back to their love, and they do. It's inevitable. Carson didn't. He retired, and unlike many of us, stayed retired. He'll be missed, and I grew up with Johnny Carson. He was a national institution, and now he's gone. In fact, he really didn't do anything. He became a recluse after he retired. He may have appeared, I'm told, in a 1993 version of The Simpsons as voice, but otherwise you didn't see Johnny Carson anymore. So goodbye, Johnny. We will miss you. A howling blizzard slammed the Northeast as promised. It was going on during the program last night and Sunday. More than 2 feet of snow and hurricane-strength gusts. Well, it's all obviously stopped air travel for thousands, keeping others off slippery highways. In fact, it was common in Michigan that people are driving, as they usually do in this kind of stuff, like idiots. So don't drive like an idiot. If you don't know how to drive in snow and ice, don't. Really, I mean that. If you don't know how to drive in snow and ice, and there is an art to driving in snow and ice. I lived in Alaska 3 years, and you either learn or die. So don't. If you have that choice and you're not good at it, just don't, because you will not do well. And, you know, people are not driving well at all. So just stay home. A lot of news tonight. Nearly 3 decades before the September 11th attacks, a high-level government panel, it turns out, developed plans to protect the nation against terrorist acts ranging all the way from radiological dirty bombs, the subject of an HBO movie tomorrow night, to airline missile attacks, according to documents just declassified. The Associated Press just got hold of them. Quote, unless governments take basic precautions, we will continue to stand at the edge of an awful abyss. That's Robert Kupperman, chief scientist for the Arms Control and Disarmament Agency, and that was written in 1977, so they knew this kind of thing was coming. I wonder how they missed it. The U.S. ambassador to Iraq acknowledged serious problems ahead of next weekend's election, but he gives assurances that great efforts are being made so every single Iraqi can vote. In an audio tape posted on the web, a speaker claiming to be Iraq's most feared terrorist declared fierce war on democracy, raising the stakes in the vote. If Fierce war against democracy. Huh. Rebels who have vowed to disrupt the balloting blew up a designated polling station near Baghdad and stormed a police station in Ramadi, west of the capital. So, what I did from the time I got up until, about 30 minutes before airtime, I watched playoff games. And in Pittsburgh, nobody apparently beats Brady and Belichick in a big game, and they sure didn't get beaten 41-27. So, New England, a dynasty, meets up with Philadelphia. And that was 27-10. Falcons lost 27-10, so there you've got it. It's going to be New England and Philadelphia in the Super Bowl. And also another death, Rosemary Woods, the devoted secretary to President Nixon, who said she inadvertently erased part of a crucial Watergate tape. That would be the famous or infamous 18-and-one-half-minute gap, has died. She died at 87 years of age. In a moment, we've got more.
Are you an op?
I want to get to the phones fairly quickly. However, I also want to read you more of this article that was only mentioned in passing last night. My guest, Sir Charles Schultz, said that referred to an atmospheric phenomena that a lot of it we don't know about. And indeed, I yanked out this story and read a little bit of it. A new atmospheric phenomena was caught on video by the crew of the space shuttle Columbia. Now, this occurred just days before the shuttle broke apart and it was just released. Astronauts relayed a video of this to NASA in real time during their 16-day flight, but the agency did not release the full data to researchers until several months after the mission's tragic end on 1 February 2003. All seven crew members killed, of course, when the shuttle exploded while reentering the atmosphere. Colleagues from a university of in Israel spent more than a year analyzing the video, which was originally taken to study atmospheric dust, but a single frame of the video was the most important, representing just 33 milliseconds, showing a mysterious reddish glow in the sky, night sky, on 20 January 2003. One of the scientists said, "I'm not sure what we saw. I just know it wasn't something that we were used to seeing. It was something extraordinary. The glow occurred about 150 kilometers above the ocean near Madagascar and did not appear to be linked with thunderstorms in any way. This contrasts sharply with other events at similar altitudes which glimmer into being when electrical current travels upward from lightning clouds at altitudes of about 10 kilometers, called sprites." You've heard of those, right, elves? "These events take the shape of sort of jellyfish, downward-pointing carrots or donuts, and tend to occur within a horizontal distance of about 70 kilometers from lightning. But the closest lightning picked up by the shuttle's video camera was 800 kilometers away, so it wasn't lightning. From this unexpected glow that's been dubbed Tiger, transient ionospheric glow emission in red." That's what it stands for, TIGER. Transient ionospheric glow emission in red. "Most sprites and elves emerge within a few milliseconds of the nearest lightning strike, but TIGER took 250 milliseconds to leap into view after this lightning struck 800 kilometers away, suggesting the two events were not in any way linked." So what the hell is it, this TIGER? Gee. You don't think this could be another man-made something or another, do you? This is really, really going to be an interesting program tonight. Let's go to the phones. Let's begin on the phones. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Art.
Hey.
This is Art from Detroit.
Okay, pick up your phone, please, Art.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is Art from Detroit, listening in on CKLW 800.
Yes, sir.
And I think I sent you a few emails back in the summer when you were mentioning about, you know, flare activity, watch for the aurora activity and stuff. I've been involved with some astronomy groups for about the past 20, 30 years.
Yes.
And naturally, like you mentioned, there's 11-year high and low cycle.
That's right.
And I remember back in the 70s, early 70s, because I was in the service with the, if I'm allowed to say it, Coast Guard, I was serving on the Great Lakes here. And normally, for the area I was in, or located, or stationed, basically, we shouldn't have had any auroras. And I remember about from 71 to 75, 76, and this was even long after I got out of the service, down here in Detroit, we'd see northern lights probably about once a week or once every other week.
Sure, you're at a latitude where you would see northern lights very easily. Now, a couple of times in the last several years, northern lights have come to the southern latitudes, even as far as myself here in the desert. But I want to be clear once again, so that you're clear when we get the guests on here. The phenomena that I'm talking about is, as far as I know, completely unprecedented since about September. Frequencies that always, always have been reliable for short-range communication, meaning 200-400 miles, within an hour of sunset, these frequencies, 3 and 4 megahertz area, have been shut down like somebody closed a big steel trap door. It's just not normal. It is abnormal. It's like somebody shuts the door. Boom, it's over. And the highest viable frequency for that kind of communication is 2 megahertz or even lower. Down into the broadcast band, this phenomenon has been dipping. And some of you can certainly testify to that fact. When I say it gets down to the broadcast band, that means that radio stations that you would normally hear, you know, 50, 100, 200, even 300 miles away, big boomers, you listen one night, and they're not there. You can't even hear them. When it gets particularly bad, it goes all the way down to the broadcast band, and that kind of thing begins to happen. Well, we've been getting tons of email here that, guess what, it's been happening a lot. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, hi, Art. How you doing?
I'm okay, sir.
Yeah, God, really sorry to hear about Johnny Carson. That's one individual I would have loved to have been able to meet and say hello to. Of all the celebrities, he's the only one that's really stands out that way for me.
Well, he stands out in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Listen, I started reading The Day After Roswell with Colonel Phil Corso.
Yes, of course.
And that was like 97 copyright, I guess, huh?
That sounds about right. Yeah.
Yeah, I was just checking it out to make sure, and I heard all your interviews with him and everything, and he mentioned HARP in the book, you know. I didn't read it at the time, but I just read it. I'm reading it right now. I'm almost finished. But he says it's a high-altitude research project is what HARP stands for.
Roughly, sir, yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I didn't ever recall hearing that before, but anyway, all those packages they put together back then all had to do with fighting off the alien threat that we apparently have had going on for quite some time.
Maybe not. I don't know about fighting off an alien threat. I think this is more like a threat to us. And if we have to fight anything off, it's a threat to us. Now, perhaps we will hear differently tonight. Maybe they'll cancel the whole interview. I don't know. But something's going on with HARP. HARP is having an effect on one of the natural pieces of our world, the ionosphere. Or something is. And my guess would be HARP. We know it's active. We know it's operational. We know it's coming up near full power. And what we don't know is what they intend to do with it. We don't know. Whether we'll find that out or not tonight, I really can't say, because I know there are an awful lot of aspects of this they cannot talk about. Now, whether they're able to talk about the larger picture with reference to HAARP, I guess we're going to find out, or whether some of the goals of HAARP have to remain classified, or whether only the details of technically what they're doing with HAARP have to remain classified, or I don't know. I guess we're going to find all of this out. That plus the little curveball they threw me here, causing my dilemma with regard to the bird flu. It's something I desperately really would like to take the lid off of for you tonight, and will one way or the other before the program's over. Sometimes being a talk show host presents you with dilemmas, decisions that are very tough to make. And so what I'll do is I'll make a decision on this, and one way or the other before the program's over, I'll read it to you. How's that? From the high desert in the middle of absolute, well, you can't say absolute darkness with a full moon, can you? I'm Art Bell, and this is the best of the night.
Code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is. Good morning, everybody. All right, I've got to note it. Have to note it. We just got several calls, several fast blasts, and we checked the official predictions made at the beginning of the year. It is number 11. Whoever you are, number 11, during the traditional Christmas and New Year sort of span, we always do the predictions. Number 11 was Johnny Carson passes. So those of you trying very hard to tell me that indeed that came to pass, it did come to pass. There is one, a very sad ding, I'm afraid. Number 11, Johnny Carson indeed passed rather quickly in the year. In a moment, we'll return to open line.
It's Ira.
You know, even though I'm not going to read you word for word this email yet, I do have a lot of concerns about the bird flu. I really do. It's like the scientists have been calling this one, sort of almost saying it's going to happen. It's going to come. it's going to jump species, and we're going to have the bird flu, human to human. It's like they've been saying that. It's like, what do they know that we don't? Why would they be right about this kind of thing? So a lot of concerns about it, and indeed they're worried about, and the word they use is pandemic. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. I seem to remember in one of your end-of-the-year prediction shows this past year that one of your callers predicted that Johnny would die this year.
That's right. Number 11.
Yeah.
Number 11. So, sadly, that was a correct prediction and very shook him awfully quick.
Yeah, I almost wonder because of the time factor if it might have been a healthcare worker somehow attached to the case.
I don't know. I suppose you could jump to some sort of conclusion like that because Johnny Carson, you know, I had no clue, and I don't think the rest of the world really did either, that he was ill, emphysema, so that would have been a fairly long-term protracted illness, I would think. But he kept it from everybody. And so it was, unless it was something like, you know, a healthcare worker close to him or something of that order, there shouldn't have been a hint of it, and you would have imagined Johnny would have had another 10 years easily, because he, you know, you just never heard anything. So, of course, it's a really big shock. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art. How are you doing?
Quite well, thank you. How are you?
Very fine, thank you. I have a question, but you're the only person that can get away with asking it. I think they'd blow me right off the line. I want to know if Harp has the capability of breaking a tectonic plate.
I'll ask for you. What I do see the technology doing, I can't even make the leap in my mind to see how it could do what you've just suggested, but I will ask.
I worked it out mathematically, and I think they have the capability to do that.
Based on what?
I'd rather not say, if you don't mind, but there's certain things that aren't right about the quake in Indonesia. And also, the animals are fleeing. The undersea life, the whales. I believe Ed Ames told you that there wasn't any whales off Hawaii. I believe you must have heard hundreds of squid washed up dead on the California coast.
I heard something about that.
There's no autopsy report yet, and there should have been one. And I think something happened, and I also believe that they have a satellite connected with HAARP, and they're doing wonderful things like you saw with the hurricanes and the blizzards with to our weather. I've never seen fronts 3,500 miles long.
All right, here's the deal. I think that you may be onto something, and there may be something else going on with all of this, but I don't necessarily attribute it to HAARP. With what little I do know about HAARP, and the things I think it might do, which are scary enough all by themselves, I don't see them having any effect on tectonic plates. Even with immense amounts of radiation, and even understanding that they seem to have some vision that HAARP could reveal underground tunnels and bunkers. And the only way it could do that is to bounce so hard off the ionosphere and to re-radiate so hard that it would literally be ground penetrating in some manner. So, you know, it'd be a pretty wild guess to go from measurement of something like that hard enough to affect something like that that far down. But I'll ask. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hey, Art, this is Brooke. I'm calling from Rhode Island.
Yes, Brooke.
I have a HAARP or a HUM update for you.
Well, which is it?
Well,
I heard
a different version of the hum last Thursday night that I have never heard, and I've been hearing this phenomena for 4 years.
You're going to have to fill me in on what hum you do have. What are you talking about?
It's the ELF, the low-frequency monotone hum that basically just goes, but for hours and hours.
And
last Thursday night.
This is something you feel in your home. Is that what you're telling me? Hear and feel or whatever?
Yes. I first discovered it in Vermont, and I called you a few times from Vermont, and you were really wonderful, and you're one of the few people that understands this phenomena, which is why I'm extremely fond of you.
I don't understand it, though. If I did, I would explain it all to you. I don't. These hums,
Well, you're open to it, Art. That's what I mean.
Yes, I'm open to it. Of course. Yeah, of course.
But I have a buddy who's a senior federal agent in Homeland Security, and he has always believed me, and he is incidentally in Las Vegas. And he said that one of his partners in his office has what he thinks I have, some sort of extrasensory hearing capacity.
People do, all right, I've got it. People do have these talents. Some of them, they hear things that others don't. Animals hear things we don't, right? And some humans, you could assume, would have a hearing that would go beyond the normal range of other human beings. So that could be. There are a variety of experiments going on, not just in our atmosphere, but also in our waters. And a lot of people, okay, here's a story for you. I tell you, I collect these things. A scientist, the headline is, Ship Begins Sound Wave Research Off Yucatan. Scientists working off Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula began using sound waves to search for information about an asteroid that may have wiped out the dinosaurs 65 million years ago. The research project began despite concerns among environmental activists who say this technology could harm whales, sea turtles, and several variety of fish in the Gulf of Mexico. Mexican authorities say the project is within, quote, acceptable limits and will be closely monitored. So this project apparently is going to use sound waves to try and figure out what happened to the dinosaurs 65 million years ago. I'm not sure how it works, but they are concerned about all of these marine mammals that may have a problem with it, beaching themselves and that sort of thing. So that's going on. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi. This is Patrick.
Yes, hello, Patrick.
I wanted to talk to you about the ionosphere a little bit.
Okay.
I heard you mention that earlier.
Okay, get close to your phone.
Yeah, can you hear me better now?
Much better, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, sorry about that. If you think about the ionosphere, it has basically one very primary function, and it serves as a filter. You're familiar with the radio spectrum. There's some very high energy just above what we see as or perceive as ultraviolet-like. And when that gets through the ionosphere, that's, for example, what causes sunburns, and it can, incinerate things if it gets through at higher frequencies. And nastier stuff above that. The ionosphere exists primarily because of two things. Number one, that, again, we're bombarded by radiation from the sun, and secondarily, we have this gigantic molten mass of iron spinning here that is our core of our planet, and it has poles that we refer to as the magnetic field. And the good folks at NOAA have been taking pictures of this molten mass with satellites for the last couple decades or so, and there has been a shift in the currents, and there are huge spots that are out of phase now, and the change is exponential. It was slow at first, and it's been increasing and becoming more rapid. And the prevailing theory is that our Earth's magnetic field is going to go through a flip-flop, and that there's evidence that that's happened before. There's core samples that have been taken in the eastern part of the state here of Oregon where I live.
Mm-hmm.
And there's places, for example, our mass transit rail line.
No, we know it's flipped before.
Through a tunnel. They have core samples from the tunnel that...
Yeah, we know it's flipped before, and we'll again.
And there's a failsafe to the ionosphere. When the magnetic field collapses and reaches its zero point, and the ionosphere fails to function, and that failsafe is the atmosphere. And what happens is the oceans heat up and release large volumes of water vapor, which goes up into the atmosphere. Being heated, it rises as high as it can to its maximum specific gravity, and the Earth's surface cools.
We call that
an ice age.
I've heard about this so-called failsafe. I hope that's right.
Well, we call that an ice age.
Mm-hmm.
And, during the more severe ice ages throughout history, there are corresponding core samples that show the magnetic field flip-flopping four or five times within a period of just a few years.
Hmm.
And as, the Earth stabilizes to its new polarity. And so to tie this all together, this is just a theory that I've discussed with a few people, or I don't have a lot to back it up, but that HARP may be an attempt to be able to set up an artificial magnetic field to keep the earth from freezing over solid.
I got it.
All right. Make the ice age survivable.
I've got it. All right. So, Harp, saving our butts from otherwise what would be a rough ride in a magnetic reversal. I don't know. Good theory, actually, with a sound basis behind it, but theory. I don't know. And it could be anything from that to the scientists just can do it, so they're doing it, and they're going to see what happens. These are, you know, some of the questions that we're going to be asking tonight. I mean, do they really know what is going to happen when they hit the ionosphere with a billion watts of power and modulated frequencies designed to actually have a sum and difference and produce a chain reaction in the ionosphere? Do we really know what that's going to do? Probably not. So is it one of those cases where the scientists are just going to go ahead and do it because they can do it and see what happens? Or do we really have solid reason to believe it will do some certain specific thing? On the first time caller line, you're on the air.
Yes, Mr. Bell, this is David calling from Salton City, California. I'm a longtime fan and a past guest on your fabulously informative program. I wrote a book called Sunstroke.
This is your full name, please.
David Kagan.
David Kagan,
yes,
wrote Sunstroke.
That's
right. And you were a guest.
Yes, sir.
Cool.
I had the time of my life on your program. I learned so much about how important talk radio really is.
It really is.
And I want to thank you so much for mentioning my book on last night's smashingly good show with Sir Charles.
Yes, it was. And your book will always be with me, David, always.
Thank you, Mr. Bell, from the bottom of my heart.
Since you're here,
yes,
and
sir,
since you wrote Sunstroke so long ago, to hear Sir Charles on this program,
yes, sir,
telling you that it's a reality, that a private company, Gene Myers and other folks have got it together, and they're going going to do what you wrote about. Well, they're going to go the whole project to pull power out
exactly
from space. Yeah,
absolutely amazing. I am elated that finally a solar power satellite apparently is going to be getting off the ground. I wish them the best of luck. However, I just have a few quick comments to make on last night's show, if you don't mind.
I don't mind.
All right, sir. I admire Sir Charles' unbridled enthusiasm regarding the actual deployment of a microwave solar satellite.
Yeah.
However, I do feel he kind of glossed over the detrimental environmental effects that we did discuss during my interview on your show.
Think so?
Yes,
there was that magic moment where we lost phone contact, and his primary and his backup number both didn't work. I thought he sounded a little chagrined when he came back from that and
absolutely
said, well, lots and lots of safeguards, Art. That's what we need.
Exactly. And I was pretty flabbergasted that he did leave the air for that period of time.
Mm.
And, well, you never know. Maybe someday we'll find out the rest of that story.
Yeah, he could have had a whole discussion with somebody, huh?
Yes, sir. Possibility. I would like to say real quick that Sir Charles repeatedly did state that a microwave satellite will only generate microwave heating on the Earth and in the atmosphere equivalent to the light of a full moon.
And that it would have a heating effect of 1/100th of a degree, I believe.
Centigrade, yes. Yeah. I would just like to point out that according to the U.S. Office of Technological Assessment, a document that I still have right before me in my desk, it's titled Solar Power Satellites. Anybody in your listening audience around the world can Google solar power satellites, go up to an actual document that I printed out here, and it will explain that such a satellite, according to the magnitude that Sir Charles is speaking about, would induce heating of at least 23 milliwatts per square centimeter on the ground, which the document does state is enough to cook biological tissues and people, animals, and plants. I in no way wish to infringe on the success of the Space Island Group's solar power satellite deployment in 2012. My objective in writing Sunstroke is just to educate folks regarding some of these environmental concerns.
Possible dangers, even.
Yes, sir.
And so you think he glossed over that?
Unbridled enthusiasm, yes, to explain the workings of the project. I feel that he did kind of gloss over that, and I'm just...
All right. Let me back up a little bit. I mean, he did suggest, though, that any... For example, if the satellite did the thing he claims it can't, and it wandered, that the amount of heat at any specific point on the ground, if all the fail-safes failed... would not be enough to be French frying things as it goes along. Do you flat out disagree with that?
Well, just let me point out in a response to that question.
That's the big question.
Yes. Do you remember those Sir Charles and his group? They do intend to use a microwave solar satellite to, as a Pied Piper, as you pointed out on air, to draw a hurricane, say, away from the East Coast.
That's right.
And due to heating up,
The ocean,
ambient temperature, yes.
Heating the water.
Yes.
In the top layers, I believe he said, and I said something like, microwave Pied Piper.
Exactly.
And so you're saying if it can do that to the water.
Yes.
And we have water in our bodies.
Exactly.
I mean, this is microwave, just like when you go to your oven and you put a cup of coffee in and hit a minute to make it nice and hot.
Absolutely.
The same kind of power, right?
Right. It's all microwave, and it does involve some surface heating. So it does. It's not one great step of logic to realize that if it can heat up the ocean to draw a hurricane away from, say, the East Coast.
Yes.
Well, then I would say, based on that fact that he stated.
I sure wish you could have made it through last night, brother.
I tried, sir. It was a wonderful program. And, again, I really wish to thank you for mentioning sunstroke, not only with Sir Charles, but over the years you have approached many guests with the subject matter.
How can you not? It's an obvious concern. If they ever were to launch this sort of thing, and here they go.
Yes, if I have 1 second left, I'd just like to tell you that the Japanese in the early 80s, they actually deployed a solar power satellite successfully in a very low Earth orbit. It did for a few minutes beam down space solar power to the Earth and was converted into AC electricity.
Really? Only a few minutes?
Just a few minutes. It was basically a sub-satellite.
Oh, I see. Okay. And so it was a very short experiment.
Yes. However, it was a monumental experiment because it did prove conclusively
that it can be done. Listen, all right, we're out of time. David Kagan.
Thank you.
David Kagan, author of Sunstroke, one of my favorite science fiction books, commenting on last night's show with Sir Charles Schulz. What was it Mr. Greenspan said? Irrational exuberance? Anyway, it's going to be a hell of a show tonight. Don't go anywhere.
Nights in white satin, never reaching the end. Letters I've written, never meaning to send. Beauty out of...
this candle.
Be it sight, sound, smell, or touch, there's something inside that we need so much. The sight of a touch, or the scent of a sound, or the strength of an oak roots deep in the ground. The wonder of flowers to be covered and then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again, or to fly to the sun without burning a wing, to lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing, to have all these things in our memories hoard, and they use them to help us to find.
Take a ride? To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is, and this is just what I've been waiting for, a couple of real heavyweights on the subject of HARP. That's who we've got coming up. First, Dr. Joseph Resnick. Dr. Resnick is an accomplished applied scientist, author, electromechanical engineer, lecturer, holding 26 patents, 12 of those are classified, with extensive lateral skill sets in medicine, electrical and mechanical engineering, earth and space systems, architecture, component design, defense security programs, global communication systems, architectures, engineering, and military homeland strategic defense. He is a recognized expert in strategic defense program design, functioning in various public and private consultancies to both U.S. government and Department of Defense. You're beginning to get the idea. He has directed non-classified strategic national and international defense initiatives for next generation and future space and soldier systems technology research and development programs. Dr. Resnick is a recognized international authority who is proficient in the areas of secure theater-wide communications operations, clandestine procedures, encryption methodologies, and the design of secure communication networks within a defense environment. He is a noted authority in areas of ComSec, InfoSec, HARP, and DigSec. I only know what some of those are. Then also, Guy Kramer is a president and CEO of Hyperstealth Biotechnology Corporation, president of United Dynamics Corporation, inventor of the passive negative ion generator, and the developer of the Superforce.com algorithm. Good Lord. DreamWorks SKG Movie TV Studio purchased two internet sites early in 2001 that were developed and maintained by Kramer through his high-speed Tumbleweed Productions. Guy has worked with and or corresponded on projects with the European Oilers National Hockey League team, NASA, JPL, Columbia Accident Investigation Board, U.S. military branches, and Canadian Forces programs. In 2003, Guy Kramer was commissioned by King Abdullah II of Jordan to develop a digital camouflage pattern that surpassed current U.S.-issued uniforms. The King, King Abdullah, has approved this KA2 pattern for Jordanian armed forces and police. Mr. Kramer has since developed over 300 digital camouflage patterns, many based on fractals, feedback loops, and some of these patterns being used for concealment training in both the British and U.S. Army training. Mr. Kramer is also the grandson and former research assistant of Donald L. Hings, P. Engineering, MBE, CM, geophysicist, inventor of the walkie-talkie radio frequency system for the Canadian military in 1942, which earned him the prestigious Member of British Empire Award and the Order of Canada. So between Dr. Resnick and Guy Kramer, we've got one heck of a duo to tackle the subject of HARP. I've been waiting a long time for this one. Be right back. Dr. Joseph Resnick, and Guy Kramer, I would like to welcome both of you to the program. And I, you know, this is radio, so we have to learn to, I guess, recognize your voices so we know who we're hearing. Dr. Resnick, say hi.
Hi. Good evening. Art, thank you.
You're very welcome. And Guy Kramer, if you'd say hello.
Good morning to those on the East Coast, and good night to those on the West Coast.
Yes, that should be pretty good voice recognition right there. All right. First of all, I've got to say, gentlemen, I'm surprised, kind of, that we're doing this program at all. Are you?
Dr. Resnick?
Let me start by thanking you, Art, for the opportunity of this forum on behalf of ASET and ComSec, and thank all of the families, all of our brothers at the 101st RRC deployed in theater and globally. I'm proud to be here. I'm happy to participate, and I'm not regretful at all, and I'm here to answer any question that I might be able to answer this evening for you.
Well said. But what I mean is I'm surprised they're letting you do this program.
Well, Art, I'm happy to report historical information to you and information that's in the public domain. And I can only give you that which is in the public domain.
Mm-hmm. Of the totality of the information that you could discuss tonight, what percentage of it do you think is not in the public domain? If you were totally free to discuss any darn thing you wanted to be, what percentage of it is secret?
Of what I've seen, 99%.
99% is secret?
Of what I've seen, but I don't see everything. I only see bits and pieces of it. And by the time I get it, it's sometimes it's 10 years later before I realize the significance of what has been done or what project I've worked on.
I see.
Guy, on the other hand, is not under such stringent requirements. And, Guy, maybe you want to speak to that a little bit.
Well, I'm a Canadian citizen, so I'm not privy to any kind of U.S. classified information on these programs.
So, in other words, you can't even make a mistake.
Exactly.
Guy can say anything he wants to, and nobody can touch him. He's up there about across the border.
Yeah. My grandfather, who you alluded to there, had actually developed the DEW line, the Distant Early Warning Line, and had developed the technology for that. So I have some insight into some of the technology and have stumbled upon many of the items that have since become public domain with my website out there.
Hmm. All right.
That's sort of how I got involved with Guy a couple of years ago.
How? His website, you mean, or what?
Actually, yeah. It was recommended that I take a look at Guy's website and that I have a conversation with Guy, and that led to realization of synergies and interests from people with whom I'm associated. So, Guy and I have become friends in the interim, and we enjoy a personal and professional working relationship and knowledge of the sciences in which we're concerned, and we're having some fun along the way. This is part of the fun, by the way.
Okay. So. All right. Before we move to HAARP, which is mainly what I wish to talk with you about on a lot of levels, Dr. Resnick sent me an email prior to the program and asked me to keep the lid on it for the moment, and I just can't do that.
Let's get that out of the way so we can get to the meat and bones of this.
Okay, this has to do with the
chicken's cooking.
The bird flu.
Okay, it has to do with the bird flu. What I asked Guy to do is to post the email that I sent to you, actually sent to Lisa earlier today,
right?
With regard to your discussion and your concerns, because I share your concerns. And a lot of people with whom I'm affiliated also share your concerns. Believe me, this is a real issue with people. In fact, I've been invited to, actually through Mr. Kramer, to consult with the folks over in Singapore. Now, Guy and I were going to go over there a few weeks ago, but we had to put that off due to these meetings that I referenced.
Mm-hmm.
But in the interim, I've got the green light. Go ahead and do that. In the interim, I've sent you an email and mentioned some names in there. Everything that I've mentioned to you is not classified at the present time. Let's get right to the meat of the avian flu.
Yes.
With regard to what's posted, and if your listeners want to go to those links that...
For those who don't, this is radio. Why don't you either go ahead and read the email aloud now or just give me the gist of it.
Okay, the gist of it, several weeks ago, a peregrine falcon was found within the continental United States, and the peregrine falcon was found to be carrying the avian flu, and it was dead. Now, there's some conjecture as to how the thing got here. Folks up at Plum Island think it may have come over the poles. Some other folks think it may have come in on a ship from Asia. Nobody knows.
Why did it not hit the press?
Well, I don't know about that.
Uh-huh.
I don't have the answer to that.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not able to tell you where in the United States. I know it was somewhere in the east, and I know the folks I was meeting with had mentioned the location, and they also mentioned it wasn't classified.
Okay.
But
at that point.
And
probably now, not at all.
Well, as of today, as of this morning, it's not. So,
can I interject for a second?
Sure.
In the Vancouver area, about 6 months ago, they had to kill about 15 million birds up here because of the bird flu. And I don't know if that news got down to your area, but that falcon may be associated with that as well.
How many?
15 million.
Oh,
there are outbreaks all over the country.
So,
in some places,
there's a lot of concern about a. You're using the word pandemic, and usually, when something has not even quite manifested exactly yet, as in human to human transmission, I hope they don't use words like that. This is a. It's like they know something we don't. They're calling this so far ahead of time. I've been reading stories about this now for months.
Well, I can't speak for the rest of the world. Art, I can only speak for the projects with which I'm associated. And that's the terminology being kicked around. That's the terminology being used.
You mentioned duck, geese, and said even, say, the hummingbird.
Well, those are possible modes of transmission. Any type of migratory fowl,
mm-hmm.
including those species that I reference in the note to you.
Could a bird really fly over the North Pole? Is that reasonable?
Absolutely.
It is?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Huh.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Migratory fowl, that's mainly how we can account for deposition of different species in lakes and propagation of different fish species, et cetera, through the migratory fowl, the droppings.
So it's
so it figures if they drop fish eggs, they can drop spores.
So
that's a possibility.
It's their way of saying they think this is an isolated incident, one bird flying over the pole or one bird being carried in on a ship, and that's it. They're hoping.
Well, I think I agree with you. It may be an isolated incident, but I think we learned a lesson, valuable one, from a similar isolated incident where a young fellow came in on an airplane in the Middle East or in the Midwest, and AIDS got into the country. So it's a consideration. It's a lot of concern, and a lot of people looking at it right now, and the appropriate powers that be are taking steps to see that the United States is protected.
Do you happen to know any estimates of how deadly they think the this particular flu would be if it became contagious human-to-human? What percentage would die? I think the 1918 flu was about 30% or something like that.
I don't have that information in front of me, but the NIH probably has that data.
Right.
Your listeners could you know easily find that data. I don't have it in front of me. I'm more from the mechanical side
mm-hmm.
and the delivery systems end of dealing with it,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the etiology and those statistics.
Anyway, you're saying that again. To be clear here, folks, a peregrine was found dead, tested positive for the bird flu, and that's news.
That's
serious
correct
news. All right, thank you for
sure
not making me hang on to that because I wanted everybody to hear it.
Well, you left out an important part in the note that I sent you last night. You were talking about buttoning down and closing up. There's no need to do that. I think that's a little premature.
Oh, not yet. But what I said is, if I see this getting loose in a human-to-human mode, that would be my inclination, personally. You know, I have a wife who has asthma, can't afford to catch any kind of flu,
sure,
much less a cold. So,
absolutely,
that would be button-down time for us. Okay, let's turn then to the subject that I really have you here tonight for. And I read your bios. Is that a sufficient background for you scientifically, or should we know more before we begin with HAARP?
Are you talking to me?
Both of you, really.
That's enough for me. I think you've given out enough.
Guy?
Yeah, that should be sufficient.
Uh-huh. All right. Are you currently working for the King of Jordan?
I'll take that one first. Yes, we are. When I say we, Dr. Resnick is working on a few other items. We're working on vehicle and weapon camouflage for the country of Jordan through the military office of His Majesty. And Joe, I'll let you answer the last half of that.
Okay. Actually, my involvement here is to facilitate complex technological transfers consistent with international treaty and to facilitate military upgrades in the form of providing next-generation equipment.
Consistent with current treaties and current.
That's right. Are you reading from my script?
No, I'm not. I'm not. I know. I didn't even print out your script.
No. Okay.
As I was saying, we don't operate with scripts here. You can't do this kind of talk show and have scripts.
Okay.
Although I find the reason that it had to be generated to be somewhat interesting. I mean, that was submitted to somebody at a senatorial level, I'm led to understand. Is that correct?
That's correct.
When we began the show, before we began the show, the only conversation you and I had, I picked up the phone, and you said, "Hey, Art, you've got a lot of friends in Washington."
Yes, you do.
You know, and I. What do you mean by that?
Well, the forum that you present here, as mentioned in some of the notes that I've sent along to Lisa, although some topics are somewhat outlandish, there is some degree of truth in some of the things that are advanced by some of your callers.
Yes.
And
that's exactly, by the way, surprisingly, how we designed the show, to be somewhat outlandish, but then again, to every now and then get to some gigantic truth.
Exactly.
And we do.
The people that I work with and people that I'm affiliated with recognize that, and that's good. They like you.
Huh.
So.
I hope that's true, and I hope that...
It is true.
Well, that's good. It really is sincerely true, then, huh?
I can only report historical information to you, Bart.
That's pretty recent history. Okay, so they want some questions answered, or they want the public made aware to some degree of what HAARP is about. It's a great mystery, this antenna array and transmitting facility in Alaska. And... I guess, is it you, Guy, who corresponded with the DOD on the HAARP topic?
Yeah, they had, U.S. Naval Space Warfare Command initially contacted me about this invention of mine, the passive negative ion generator.
Uh-huh.
And just to give you a little bit of a rundown on that, it's not available in the United States. It's not FDA approved. It is Health Canada approved, which is our FDA equivalent. It is a small device that works off a material reaction. There are no batteries required, and it gives off enough negative ions to be biologically active in that it will, just by breathing in these negative ions that this passive negative ion generator is emitting, you can actually get the benefit that negative ion studies for years have shown that they can override the detrimental effect of positive ions out there.
Let me jump in here and give an example of negative ions.
Fire away.
In submarines, for example, a closed vessel or a closed container, if someone smokes a cigarette, mm-hmm. that gives off negative ions and floods the chamber. In much the same way, Guy, I apologize for using this analogy, but that's a very simplistic analogy, but accurate. It's like smoking. I would equate this to smoking a cigarette.
Cigarette smoke gives off positive ions. negative ions are good. Positive ions are bad.
Yes, and I believe that.
But through the decay,
yes.
Through the decay in a closed container, the ions change. The charges change.
Yes, they do.
And the
Absolutely.
Smoke, the smoke virtually drops to the bottom of the container. Doesn't
That's
it?
Right.
Is that correct? You see, I have a device exactly like that in my house. I've had one for years, so I know exactly what it is. Gentlemen, hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour. My guests are Dr. Joseph Resnick and Guy Kramer. The main topic that we're going to be discussing this night, or we'll drag as much out as we can from these fellows, is HAARP. That thing in Alaska, that giant. In fact, we've got a picture on the website of it. That's a very large antenna indeed. Take a look.
Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
I play this in honor of Billy Goodman. Billy Goodman used this as a theme song back in the 80s, you know, a couple decades ago, when I was doing a show in Las Vegas about exactly this kind of topic. Billy was doing a very similar show right across town, and I just recently located Billy after all these years and had a chat with him. He's in New England, and one of these days we'll have him on the show and let him say hi. I was so happy to find him after a couple of decades. Well, my guests, a couple of heavyweights, Guy Kramer and Dr. Joseph Resnick. And they're here basically about the HARP project, and that's where we're going in a moment. I guess I would like to understand, with respect to both my guests, what their expertise is in the area of the HARP project. By the way, everybody, it's High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program. That's the name, H-A-A-R-P.
Let's get back to work here.
Yes. So your area of expertise individually, Dr. Resnick first.
Yes, sir.
What is your area of expertise, or where do you fit in with HARP, doctor?
Okay. Actually, I first became involved with HARP, or heard the term the first time, back in 1983, during the Reagan years. There was some talk about establishing a new agency called DARPA, Defense Advanced Projects Agency.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, I was developing some technologies with regard to microstructures, microcapsules, miniature heat exchangers, that sort of thing.
Mm.
And I became involved at the behest of some contacts at NASA, where I was working on some other projects. And one thing led to another, and I got involved and did some work. And again, I didn't know what I was doing until about 10 years later. I happened to see some of these codings that are taught in one of my U.S. patents, the patent 5523757, which is the stealth technology patents. and the patent 5163504. I think, Guy, you've posted those on the website so that the listeners can take a look at them.
What are the patents for?
The one has to do with miniature heat exchangers. For example, on a surface that impacts a particular radio frequency, as a result of that impact, minute heat coefficients are generated.
Uh-huh.
In some instances, for example, in certain kinds of air platforms, that could cause peeling and flaking of certain reflective materials and adsorptive materials, such as RAM, radar attenuating materials, and resulting in exposure of the airframe or platform.
In other words, you could take a stealth aircraft and hit it with something and peel off the stealthiness, and suddenly it could be seen by radar. Did I translate that correctly?
Yeah, well, you're on the right page, but the significance of 504, patent 5163504, solved that problem. And in actuality, there was such a problem in 1989 when the Israeli radar picked up a signature of an F-117. And I actually came in and did a special initiative under the auspices of NASA to solve that problem. And that resulted in the issuance of the stealth technology patent.
What was Israeli radar doing that allowed them to see a 117?
Well, there are international... actually, it was picked up at that time. We had some craft over in theater over there in preparation, and there are exchanges of military compounds. That's commonplace. That happens all the time.
Yes, yes. The question was, what did they do to be able to see a 117?
They hit it with a 16.25 gigahertz. That's the general frequency. For example, if you're flying in a commercial aircraft, the fuselage of that air platform is being hit with 16.25.
Uh-huh. So you're saying they hit it with standard radar?
Standard radar, yeah.
And but they must have done something somewhat different, because normally a 117 isn't seen. So were they modulating in some different way?
No, what was happening is the binder material on the F-117s was peeling and flaking as a result of the impact and the impart of the 16.25.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. Well, we solved the problem. The problem was solved. And that's public domain. You can go and look at those patents, and that's public domain.
Hmm.
So that's essentially how, to get back to your question, how I first became affiliated with HARP, and I didn't see the technology again. That was after the U.S. Patent Office and I fought for about 6 years. As a matter of fact, 5523757 was in the 902 section for about 7 years. That had 153 claims. I think there are 23 permitted to issue. And that includes the license plates that we sell that defeat radar and X-band, K-band, that kind of stuff.
Hmm.
But that's how I first became aware. The first time I heard the term was in, I want to say, 1983, Mr. Ray Guns was in charge, and we used to laugh about that because we knew where certain initiatives we were working at that time were headed, and they had to do with the new DARPA situation. So that's how I became involved in this whole thing, and I didn't see the results of my work till many years later after it was declassified.
And how does your work, as you just described it, apply to HARP?
It has to do with the phased array antenna systems.
It has to do with the phased array antenna systems.
Yes, sir. So okay. Similar to the ones out your way, the ones that you have that are propagating. You know, there's some guys up on Roadrunner Road, northeast of Pahrump there.
Uh-huh.
And they say that they're out of UNLV, and they're monitoring outputs that are causing some problems there at Bald Head Mountain. And they say that Art Bell is harping Bald Head Mountain.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I do have, that's just a fine introduction. I do have 5 acres of antennas here.
It's a big
antenna. And it consumes all 5 acres. Now, it's a big antenna. And I do a lot of low frequency work, guys, in the area of 3 to 4 megahertz. 3 to 4 megahertz has been ultra-reliable for amateur radio operators to talk to each other 200-400 miles away, NVIS-type communications, near-vertical incident stuff. And it's always been there. I've been a ham all my life. And since September of this year, within 1 hour of sunset, all that stuff is mysteriously gone every single night. It's very odd. Everybody I've talked to has never seen anything like it. I know darn well HARP is operating in around 2.3 as well as other frequencies. And I've got recordings of them. And I think they're affecting the ionosphere, or at least I think there's a good chance they're affecting the ionosphere. Now, high-frequency active auroral research program, that's what that means. That means they're doing something to the ionosphere, right?
Guy?
I would say since September we've had an unprecedented history of solar activity. Not every day. We're at the low point of the solar cycle, and we should not be having the solar flares that we're having.
It's true, but that, listen to me, that doesn't cover it. It doesn't cover it. Yes, we've had a lot of solar activity, but at times when there's been no recorded solar activity, it's quiet. The KB index is down, just about to the bottom. There's, in the green, no problems, and still it shuts down within an hour of sunset, very unlike the 3 to 4 megahertz range. There's something different in the ionosphere. Now,
That could be a dust phenomenon.
A what phenomenon?
Ionospheric dust.
Ionospheric dust?
Ionospheric dust that creates a condition called marginal chaff, and that would have the capability to skirt your signal. I don't know. I'm just saying off the top of my head, that's one possibility.
We're just giving out alternatives to HARP. We're not saying it isn't HARP. We're just saying that there are some things that have gone on over the last couple months that it could be.
Could be elephants marching across Montana, too.
Well, I'm not aware of any triangulation stations or anything out that way.
Mm. All right, so.
If there were, I would know about it.
Yes.
I think I would know about it.
Uh-huh. So,
I think Guy would be able to track that.
Oh, either one of you. What is the purpose of HARP? We've got its name. What is it supposed to do?
I would say primarily it's probably there for ballistic missile defense.
Really?
Heating up the ionosphere, charging it up. Any ballistic missile coming through that charged up ionosphere is essentially going to be fried. And I would say that's probably the primary purpose. Secondary purpose, which is probably used for more or less most of the time, is submarine communications. Stimulating the ionosphere so you get those extremely low-frequency waves that can penetrate the ocean floor.
Yes.
And I think that's public domain, that this was the primary reason that they were going to set it up. And the location in Alaska is the exact location that you want to be in the proximity to the ionosphere in the latitude, longitude there. Ground-penetrating radar, again, that's no secret, but they need to bounce it off the ionosphere, and you need something fairly close in order to penetrate. I mean, your adversary has to be within a certain range. And so Alaska wouldn't be my first choice for it if you were going to be looking at adversaries around the world.
Well, yes, ground penetrating radar. I mean, that was one of the stated goals, that it could locate underground tunnels and bunkers or something of that sort, was said, right?
Mm-hmm.
Guy has mentioned the militaristic aspects of this, and there are other aspects to HARP that have intrinsic value. For example, in dealing with cellular and molecular consequences of the ELF, for example. Through use of particular frequencies in ELF, you can cause plants to grow faster.
Say good and close to the telephone for me. You can cause plants to grow faster.
You can cause plants to grow faster. Certain insects, such as bees, can be stimulated to increase output. So there are some beneficial aspects other than militaristic certainly being examined through the HARP initiative.
And crops to grow better?
Absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely.
Stimulation of extremely low frequencies might cause crops to grow faster.
That's right.
There's been studies, many studies done on vegetable growth, and they found that cucumbers will actually grow at a twice their normal length in a positive ion environment.
It is a positive ion environment what's produced by HARP after it bounces off the ionosphere?
Well, HARP can go both ways. It can produce a negative ion ratio, heavy ion ratio around the globe, or it can produce a positive ion ratio. Now, we were just talking about bouncing something off the ionosphere and being within a certain range, but if you're changing the ion ratio, that's a global effect. That's going to affect everything from Alaska to Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like an umbrella.
Yeah.
Yes. So, again, you've given me some sort of light points of, gee, maybe some of the thought about benefits of HARP. So you're saying that any ICBM coming through an area charged in the ionosphere by HARP would be destroyed?
Could be.
Could be destroyed?
Yes.
Do we have any proof of that?
I think they have some strong proof, computer modeling and whatnot.
Really? You see, I didn't know that.
Oh, that's available in the public domain out there.
What is it coming through such a highly charged portion of the ionosphere that would kill an ICBM? Can you tell me?
Joe?
I think the electronic systems would be compromised.
Uh-huh.
Unless they were shielded. And, excuse me, in most cases these aren't shielded because they lack the requisite technology to accomplish the shielding. So
that is something. Would a single installation of HARP, it perhaps would be effective against a single ICBM launch or even a couple, I suppose, but certainly no defense against all-out war.
I think it could be.
Oh.
You're not charging in this case, you wouldn't be charging a specific area, but the entire ionosphere.
The entire ionosphere?
Yes.
You're suggesting the entire ionosphere could be charged hard enough, high enough, well enough to destroy an ICBM or many of them coming through it?
Well, with 3 billion watts of energy at HARP alone, and HARP's not the only one up there.
Do you know the current status with regard to HARP and power output? Where are they? Do you know?
I know they were getting close to that that 3 billion watts. Joe, do you?
It's on the website. If the reader or listeners would like to go to the website, HARP is pretty good at keeping up data.
Gee, last I heard, they were around 1 billion watts. I didn't know they were so anywhere near 3 billion. Then, my God, that's a lot of power. Wow.
Your microwave oven produces 1,000 watts.
Yeah, thank you. That gives everybody some little idea of the scale of everything here. 1,000 watts compared to, 3 billion watts effective, I guess. That's Now, I've heard it said by some people that I've interviewed on the subject of HARP that HARP could literally burn a hole in the ionosphere. Is that an accurate analogy?
It could create a hole. Yeah,
I don't think burn is the right term.
No. Okay. Yeah. It can create a hole in the ionosphere.
Create a hole in the ionosphere. And what effects, can you describe any effects that are attendant with that? If you pour that much energy into the ionosphere, in fact, right through it, what are you doing to the ionosphere? What do we know so far with regard to the experiments they've conducted so far about what happens around the ionosphere when you hit it that hard? Is it like a big bell that rings? Is it, does it become suddenly very absorbent? What happens?
In the case of going through the ionosphere, I think you've already answered the question. It becomes absorbent. It's as if it's not even there at certain frequencies.
Yes.
It depends now. We need to define, atmosphere. Are we talking, troposphere? Are we talking thermosphere? Are we talking altitudes of, 85 meters or kilometers, or are we talking 600 kilometers?
Yes, give me the altitudes. The ionosphere being what altitude roughly to what altitude roughly?
0 to approximately 600 kilometers high. And then you reach into what they call the mesosphere, and then you hit the mesopause, and then the thermosphere. Then above that, you run into the mixed gases, hydrogen, nitrogen, those sorts of things that are out in the shallow space areas. So,
a lot of the work that they're doing with HARP and HIPAS, which is a second auroral heater array, stands for High Power Auroral Stimulation.
Where is HIPAS located?
HIPAS is...
I guess Poker Flats, isn't it?
No, it's 288 kilometers southeast of HARP. So it's not near Poker Flat there, and we'll get into Poker Flat in a minute. But they're basically...
Officially, everything's run out of Poker Flats, though.
Yes.
Is it? In other words, a remote operation?
Not necessarily. There's, in order to steer a signal,
yes,
which is spoken about all through the HARP mandate and work leading up to it, you need three arrays in order to steer it. They only talk about two, HARP and HIPAS.
Uh-huh.
There's a better array that the DOD says was canceled, but if it was better, why was it canceled? And that is the FEPA array. And the FEPA array stands for, if I can find it here, it is the... I'm looking. Frequency-independent phased array antenna.
All right. Hold it right there. We'll get right back. Three to steer it, huh? Three are needed to steer it. All right. Dr. Joseph Resnick and Guy Kramer are my guests. The subject is HARP, the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program. Be right back.
Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
A little thought for all of you amateur radio operators out there to ponder. I wonder if the Federal Communications Commission became a cheering section and then finally passed something called broadband over power lines over the objections of everybody who wanted to use a shortwave spectrum. And I mean, they became a cheering section for it, folks. And yeah, it passed. I wonder if the FCC did that knowing that HARP was going to turn the shortwave bands into mush anyway. So what the hell? Subject HARP. Guests, Dr. Joseph Resnick and Guy Kramer. What I said a moment ago was a joke. Kind of a joke. Not really much of a joke, actually. Some very interesting things happened. Along came this new technology gentleman called BPL, Broadband Over Power Lines, way to get, the Internet into every American household through the power lines. And the FCC just about went into a cheering motion for the whole thing, and it went sailing through, and so I sort of jokingly said maybe they went ahead and did that over the objections of hams. And well, you know something interesting about it? Not just the hams were objecting to it. In fact, we all thought that, the hams will write the objections, will be ignored. But you know what? The military, they'll come along. And in fact, they did in the beginning, and they wrote terrible objections to the whole concept of BPL. And then all of a sudden, mysteriously, they backtracked on themselves, and the military virtually withdrew their objections to a BPL, and I wonder why. In other words, could they have been told to withdraw their objections because there was something bigger going on? Could it be that they knew that HARP was going to turn the shortwave bands into mush anyway? And you know, that was only a half a joke, because they're sort of turning into mush. Some of the frequencies that we use to operate aren't behaving normally. Gentlemen, is that HARP?
Guy, I'll defer that to you.
It could be.
Yeah, it could be, huh? Might be. Well, you know, when you just think about it, guys, not just you, Guy, both of you, it's one of the stated goals, you know, to screw around with the ionosphere. Now, there's rumors of everything from, the way you guys painted it, it sounded like babies have rosy cheeks and frogs hopped around happily and crops grow, and my God, it's the best thing that ever happened.
Bees make more honey, too.
Yeah, and bees make more honey, that's right. And it's a wonderful world we live in, as HARP rains down on us. Somehow, it just doesn't seem like Paul'd be satisfied that he had the whole story if he just heard that.
Well, Guy and I had a little conversation while we were on break here.
Oh.
With regard to another positive aspect of HARP, there are positive aspects. How would you like to throw your cell phone away? How would you like
I'd like to have them all blown to smithereens.
Yeah,
that's my personal opinion.
How would you like to be able to just drop two wires into the ground and pay a one-time fee for a telephone and talk to anybody anytime and never pay any more money? Wouldn't that be nice? Throw away the telephones. That's being looked at.
Sounds kind of like, I don't know, like a man who lived long ago invented, you know, electricity through the air and, you know.
Yeah, but I agree with you.
You do?
Sure. But you can't deny the existence of ELF.
No, I can't.
And systems such as that would be based on ELF.
Mm-hmm.
Probably one of the reasons why certain people don't want people to go into that range.
This is all. This really sounds like Tesla stuff, doesn't it? I mean, it really
not at all.
Well, no, really.
Well, I would disagree. I mean, the Russians had the Tesla towers back in the 80s, and the Tesla towers are just a baby version of the HARP. Now the Tesla towers, in the late 80s, early 80s, were producing something called the woodpecker signal over the ham radio band.
The Russians were doing that, actually, yes.
Yes.
Over the horizon radar.
Over the horizon, under the ground. If it's ELF, it's going under the ground as well.
So that was underground also?
Yes.
Okay, guys. Other than the birds chirping and rosy faces for little babies and all the positive stuff, some of us in the public, and I'm one of them, aside from what effect it, you admit, might be having on the shortwave bands, what else might it be doing?
Guy?
I mean, it's not all chirping birds. There's got to be concerns here. You heat up the ionosphere enough to burn up an ICBM or all ICBMs coming in.
Guys, this might be a good time to digress for a second and go back and talk about putting a hole in the ionosphere and doing an MBA.
Moon bounce.
That's where you go.
In 2001, the HARP site had talked about doing moon bounces, And in the late 60s, the ham radio operators discovered that they could send a signal to the moon, bounce it off the moon, and hit the other side of the planet,
mm-hmm.
of Earth,
mm-hmm.
and essentially communicate with someone on the opposite side of the planet. Well, this, of course, couldn't take place until they started doing moon bounces.
Mm-hmm.
So HARP tried this in 2001 and supposedly were successful at doing it. In order to do this, you need to put a hole in the ionosphere and send your signal through the hole.
So they bounced non-traditional frequencies, frequencies that would normally bounce off the ionosphere and or be absorbed by it. They bounced those kinds of frequencies off the moon?
Well, you have to blow a hole through the ionosphere first.
Yes.
And then send a secondary signal. So that would implicitly command a second system.
Whew. So they did that in 2001.
In 2001. And in order to do that, you have to steer the signal. And in order to steer the signal, you need three arrays.
You were alluding to that previously. The one that had been, you said, shut down, perhaps the best one of all. Is it really shut down, my listeners are
asking?
Well,
they were saying it was never built. But something's been built up there.
Well, Guy, this might be a good time to invite the listeners to take a look at that website and the fractalizations that...
Yes, the camouflage.
Yeah, I think you...
The website can be found. It's the first link on the superforce.com site.
For those of the listeners following this.
And on that page, we show how HARP can essentially be gone. It's still there, but it's under camouflage, and you wouldn't be able to tell if you were flying a plane 60 feet over it.
All right, so you're
much
saying...
Much like Roadrunner Road out your way.
Uh-huh. So you're saying that the installation... could be there and not there.
In other words, probably within the Poker Flat region. According to the HARP information from the U.S. Air Force, U.S. Navy,
uh-huh.
it should have been built at the Poker Flat region, not
uh-huh.
in the area it is in Alaska.
Hmm.
But this is all conjecture. We're not sure. And those examples on the website, those are just illustrations and shouldn't be taken as gospel.
Okay. Dr. Nick Begich is somebody I've interviewed on the subject of HARP. He believes that there is a part of this technology that could be used, for example, aimed and used to mentally confuse troops on a battlefield. You could aim it at an enemy's troops before the war ever began and turn them into blithering idiots, basically. In other words, affect them biologically.
I don't know if you can turn them into blithering idiots, but you could impart of some kind of...
I exaggerate a little, but anyway, affect them mentally, profoundly.
At this point, I don't know if profoundly might be the capability that's there. I definitely believe that they could increase the positive ion ratios to overdose these people in positive ions, and that has a series of psychological... detrimental effects on people. It takes the fight out of soldiers.
Well,
it doesn't make them a bunch of blithering idiots, though.
Well, ELF, very low combinations of frequencies, though, have been shown, haven't they, to do very weird things to biology.
Joe?
I think that the listeners can go to a website, viewzone.com/harp.exec.html, and get that answer.
Huh. I bet 1 in 100 got that.
On our website.
It is linked?
I think that's on our website.
That's on the website.
Okay.
Viewzone.com, harp.exec.html. That gives you all the frequency ranges. And anybody that knows about physiology, you can make your own determinations with regard to impact.
Okay, I was also told that HARP is doing some interesting things in terms of the way it affects the ionosphere, that they send audio tones, perhaps two tones, let us imagine, that beat together. And then the sum and the difference of that beat are also produced. And in that way, they're able to get to such an ultra-low frequency that they can begin to cause some sort of domino kind of effect in the ionosphere. Is this something you can talk about?
I don't recognize that to be factual in as much as those frequency ranges are between 70 and 150 hertz in ELF. So combination of those frequencies or stimulation would not in itself cause anything audible, in that we hear between 400 and 800 hertz.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what you're talking about would emanate, we wouldn't be able to hear it. Our human physiology just can't, we can't hear that.
But again, it could have an effect on biological things. I mean, ELF in certain ways does, right?
Absolutely. I would agree that it, perhaps the intercellular fluid, for example, and if the person had eaten, for example, a high sodium content that day, well, it's common knowledge that the different elements found on the periodic table respond and couple and yield in different frequency ranges. Now, theoretically, if a person had eaten a lot of salt or had a pizza and was impacted somewhere between 70 to 150 hertz ELF, okay, it might cause something, but we don't know what.
Right.
And I haven't seen anything to lead me to believe that something like that is taking place. I haven't seen it.
How large can we describe HARP's influence in? Is there a way to put a size to it, how big its influence is?
It depends on the use. If it's to increase a global ion ratios, then it's a global influence. If it's to target a certain area, it probably has a limited target area.
I can speak from the bureaucratic end. There's about 16 or 17 different agencies with their hands in HARP and authorized by Congress.
Huh.
So it's pretty big. Everybody's got their hand in it.
That's politically big, yeah.
Yeah, it's big.
Okay. Here's a question that was suggested I ask, and I'll just pick it out because how can I not ask it? Can HARP create a nuclear-sized explosion without radiation? Now, I can't even believe that you sent that to be asked. Can it?
There is a patent that the company actually that designed HARP holds. That patent number is listed on that link on our website that we discussed.
Yes.
And HARP itself likely has some things it can do that we're not fully aware of yet. There is a link on the website that shows what a grape cut in half placed in a microwave oven of 1,000 watts gives off, basically ball lightning, and it'll give off maybe 15 large pulses of ball lightning. Now, if you multiply that by 3 million times, you have HARP. And we show on there that you just need a larger grape in order to produce this.
God.
So the patent itself actually alludes to putting a source such as methane in a region and then triggering it. And one of the last diagrams actually talks about floating a blimp of some sort in the atmosphere and then triggering it with two arrays. And this triggering effect would actually create a nuclear-sized explosion without radiation.
And
with a moon bounce...
Methane, now. You said methane, right?
Yes.
And you could produce an explosion equivalent to an atomic weapon without the radiation.
Yes.
Using HARP as the triggering mechanism, setting it off.
Well, they could use different arrays, but HARP, likely because the company's the one that designed HARP, the HARP array, was looking at the use of HARP for that end result.
Jeez, you guys are scaring me. I didn't think I'd get this kind of information from you.
There's nothing to be scared of.
Oh?
No, absolutely not.
No.
It's all theoretical.
Learn to love the bomb, right? You know, Mark, in Juneau, Alaska, I get questions on my computer as we go. You know, these are very curious people. He says, hey, Art, if HARP can fry an ICBM, what would it do to a reentering space shuttle?
Probably do the same thing if they had it set up to do such a thing, but why would they?
Yeah.
Right. Why would they? Indeed. So you guys theorize that the third HARP, the third finger of HARP, is in fact existing, but you can't see it. You believe that? In other words, you need three, you're telling me, for the steerage we've been talking about. So,
yes.
So yeah. You pretty well believe this third one does exist?
And I defer that question to a guy.
I would say the third one is probably the most powerful out of the three. HARP is the disinformation. That's the... that's the location they want you to think that the key source is.
What about commercial airliners? Are they flying at an altitude where commercial airline passengers wouldn't have anything to worry about, or do they?
No. We're talking about altitudes of 150 kilometers.
Mm-hmm. Did HAARP come into use after 9/11?
There looks to be possible evidence that it may have been used a week after 9/11. Now, everyone in the shortwave community knows that HAARP was actually activated immediately after 9/11. Now, this would have been probably a defense DEFCON-type situation where they didn't know who was attacking the states. It may have been that missile defense side that they would have started up to be prepared.
So, in other words, somebody pushed the panic button and said, look, if HAARP has the ability to do whatever, and I guess you're not prepared to tell me what that is other than the ICBM protection?
Guy, let me jump in here just for a second. I'd have to disagree with that school of thought in that the HAARP system facilities are using gas-fired circuit breakers in locations, and they use a system of emergency generators that are triggered every 72 hours. Hmm. So it's very possible that what happened during that time period. Now, keep in mind, I've been told by the AO, which action officer up at Greeley, they've got about 85 of those up there. And throughout that whole system, through Poker Flats, through Greeley, there may be as many as 200 of those that are on a cycle. So those cycle every 72 hours. It's possible somebody had a switch open, hit an accidental fire test shot. Hmm. That was interpreted as HAARP being activated. So, you know, it was probably that 72 cycle. You have 200 or 300 of these generators going off. I would attribute it to that.
It was a series of strange solar storms, or I should say geomagnetic storms that we had without a solar storm.
Right.
The week after 9/11, when the stock market was falling, and U.S. Naval Space Warfare Command was following my research for the previous year, where we were showing the stock market.
They follow
market.
Everybody's research, Guy. Not
oh,
just
they do, yes. But the stock markets tend to fluctuate with natural ion ratios. And they were well aware that we were showing this correlation on our website.
I would tend to support that that theory rather than HAARP having some influence.
Really?
I would.
Is HAARP being used to for the purpose of some kind of mind control? That's a flat-out question to which I honestly don't expect a flat-out answer, but I'll try. Is it? Mind control.
Not that I'm aware of.
Other than positive ion overdose. And, again, that would be a negligible effect. We're not talking about blithering people.
Yeah, blithering idiots.
Yeah.
Hmm. All right. Well, the fact that HAARP can trigger a nuclear-sized explosion without the radiation is a new one on me. And also, gentlemen, there's been some recent sightings of red skies, red parts of the upper atmosphere that scientists can't explain. Anyway, hold it right there. We're at the bottom of the hour. This is some program, isn't it? I'm Art Bell.
Hurts when there's nothing but a slow that your fear seems to hide deep inside your mind. All alone I have cried, silent tears full of pride, in a world made of steel, made of
To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
This song always gives me just the right frame of mind to ask the question I want to ask. In this case, it's about science in general. And the, I call it the, just push the button, Frank, and let's see what happens question. In a moment, we'll ask exactly that. Evening in the Darkness, Dr. Joseph Resnick and Guy Kramer are my guests. The subject is HAARP. They're both well-credentialed to be discussing it. Gentlemen, welcome back.
Hello. Thank you, Art. Pleasure to be back.
I want to ask you the, hey, just push the button, Frank, and let's see what happens question. Surely at the beginning, I don't know where we are with knowledge about what HAARP has or hasn't accomplished in the ionosphere, how far along we are, but at some point, or perhaps still at a point yet to come with HAARP, there is going to come this moment where there's something incredible they can try, and absolutely honestly, they might have some idea of what might happen, but in science, a lot of times, to be honest, you really get an unexpected result, and so you don't always know what's going to happen. Well, like when we exploded the first atomic bomb, there was a significant line of thought, scientifically, quite mainstream line of thought, that thought the entire atmosphere might chain react and ignite, burning us all up, and yet they pushed the button. And so with HAARP, as the button choices come along, I just wonder how careful the two of you feel the button pushers are being.
I think they're being very prudent with their experimentation and looking at the results before they go to the next step.
I'm sorry, who was that who answered?
That was Guy.
That was Guy.
I would have to agree with that. A lot of effort, a lot of different agencies are involved in this project. There's a lot of policing.
Yes.
If you just go to any one of the websites, and you'll see how many agencies, and they're all under federal mandate.
The project in its early days, it just didn't seem as though it was particularly military at all, and then it suddenly became very military, didn't it?
Joe?
Who wants that?
Guy?
I think it was the purpose from the start was probably military.
Oh, you do?
Oh, I certainly do.
How refreshing.
And I think that the educational side of it is just that. It's only a side. And the military knew that they likely couldn't hide their involvement in this and eventually open it up, and that's when everyone kind of found out that there was more to it than just university research.
I see. I believe these two questions go to you, Guy, because I don't think Dr. Resnick wants them. Was HAARP used in Afghanistan?
No, but I was sharing information on our natural ion ratio algorithm with the U.S. government, or I should say U.S. military branches, and just kind of showing them when the mass surrenders were taking place. And they were all taking place on the same type of polarity when the ions were the same way.
Hmm.
And that information was likely used down the road.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Resnick, do you think that this particular ion fortuitous combination was an accident?
I would have to defer that to Guy.
I see. Guy, was Iraq a target of HAARP?
It's possible. We knew that moon bounces were possible after 2001.
Uh-huh.
We had shared information with them on the types of days when troops were surrendering, and before the troops moved into Baghdad, HAARP was active for the precise time that the moon was mutually visible between Baghdad and HAARP in Alaska.
Clear implication being they bounced a signal off the moon.
Yes.
And so that would be, with respect to Iraq, the answer to that would be a yes. It was used.
I mean, we can only guess that that's what they might be doing.
That's right. I'd say, Guy, you'll have to admit that's somewhat speculative, in that the hard data that I've seen in the sites and the fact that you've come forward with this information to the NWC ops, it's total speculation at this point. There's no hard data.
Is it all speculation for you, Doctor?
Well, Art, let me be frank with you.
Please.
I'm a scientist. If I can't cut it, weigh it, or put it under a microscope,
it ain't
or
so.
Run it through one of my machines, mm-hmm. I'm real doubtful of it.
And that's the problem with HAARP, is we
don't
know.
I'm from Missouri.
Mm-hmm. All right.
You got to show me.
One other speculative thing that a lot of people have been saying about HAARP is weather control. The control of the weather, our weather, hurricanes, perhaps large forces of weather, or perhaps things much more mundane, you know, like putting low pressure systems.
Guy, I think that's Iola.
I beg pardon?
He's referring to a new technology that the U.S. government has approved for use in, where is it, Texas now?
I believe it is.
Iola?
Texas-based. It's a Russian technology.
Is it now? And what is that?
I'll defer that to Guy.
Ionization of the local atmosphere. It is a rainmaking device from Russia.
Dr. Resnick?
Yes, sir.
If you ever have to testify in front of Congress, be sure and take Guy with you.
I have testified in front of Congress numerous times.
Was Guy there for you?
No, Guy wasn't there. I testified in front of
go ahead.
Honorable Helen Bentley.
Yes, go ahead, Guy. I'm sorry.
It is a from a Russian technology that they have used for a number of years down in the United Arab Emirates to increase rainfall by, they're saying, between 15 and 300%.
Increase rain between 15 and 300%.
Yes, and what they're doing with this technology is they're basically flipping the polarity of the ions in the atmosphere to force rain to come out of any kind of clouds that might be present.
Do you know how they're achieving that? I mean, flipping it with what?
With antenna arrays. In the case of HAARP, they're bouncing something off the ionosphere. In the case of this IOLA technology, they're affecting all the ions within the air that we breathe down at our level and cloud level.
Okay, so are you both saying that as far as HAARP is concerned, weather control is not an objective?
I wouldn't say that that's...
You wouldn't?
If it's possible, it's probably way down on their priority list.
I'd have to say the jury's still out on that.
Okay. And then one more here. Was HAARP used prior... this is a killer. Was it used prior to the 2004 U.S. federal election?
It was turned on the day of the election, but that doesn't mean that that's what it was used for.
I think that what happened was, if I can draw back to Fort Greeley and up there, Poker Flats, they have a system of machines up there that constantly reset and activate. That's probably what happened.
Now, several times, Doctor, you have suggested that perhaps there was an accidental lighting up of HAARP at a otherwise controversial moment.
No. You misinterpreted what I said. There may have been a switch left on somewhere.
I see. A switch,
That caused a spike in an energy grid or a gradient that someone may have misinterpreted as a an activation of a potential HAARP system.
I see. I promised, I think it was a young lady, that I would ask this, so it bears asking. Could HAARP possibly affect tectonic plates?
Go ahead, Joe.
Guy and I discussed that. My opinion, no. I think that something else was responsible, and I did listen to that that query as it came in, and I certainly appreciate that person's concern. In fact, she should probably contact us. I thought it was a boy. I'm not sure, but
could have been a young man. Yeah.
Could have been. I thought it was a young man. That young man should contact us at the NA2TDC because he said the magic words. He did the math. Our people have done some modeling too, and we found that the modeling and the math just doesn't obtain. So it wouldn't have been possible for ELF to impact that tectonic plate to cause that tsunami.
Mm-hmm.
I would totally concur with Joe on that.
Okay. What are the range of the unknowns with HAARP? In other words, what possible things could come of HAARP that might be, A, unexpected, and B, in some way detrimental to the people living here on the planet?
Well, I'd like to jump in here just for a second. One hopeful outcome of HAARP is to make the world happier.
Happier.
Yes, absolutely. Mm. If, in fact, the system does exist, which undoubtedly HAARP classification nomenclature has been designated and stated, one of the objectives could be to make people happy.
Happy.
And Guy, I think maybe you should mention the request you had from a police office over the last couple of days in that.
For the path of
for your eye on generator, yeah. Go ahead. I think that would be good.
Well, the path of negative ion generator can override any of these detrimental effects that HAARP is possibly capable of putting out by changing ion ratios out there. And to a certain degree, I mean, we're not producing power outputs that a plug-in generator can do, but it is something that can help anyways.
So the bottom line is, if there is a HAARP, you can get one of these ion generators from Guy and turn it on. Don't worry about it.
Please. All right. Now, I know something about these because, as I mentioned, I have one in my home. And,
yes.
Yeah, they take care of dust particles and smoke and things like that, but I don't consider them, I didn't consider them, as a defense, in quotes, against HAARP or something like that.
Well, I think that your view of HAARP in terms of its output potentials over broad spectrum is misguided, is misinformed.
Is it?
Guy, could you help me here a little bit and explain this to the minimal, with regard to the minimal effects of the phenomenon?
Mm.
On the positive ion effects?
That's correct.
Okay, I'll give you a list of side effects from positive ion winds, such as the Chinook wind in Calgary or the Santa Ana wind down in Southern California.
Yeah, but this is only with respect to ion polarization. That's all. I mean, there's more to HAARP than that, right?
There is, but listen to the list of side effects here. Body pains, sick headaches, dizziness, twitching in the eyes, nausea, fatigue, faintness, disorders in salt, water accumulation, respiratory difficulties, allergies, asthma, heart attack, circulatory disorders.
Yes.
Psychological side effects, emotional imbalance, irritation, vital disinclination, compulsion to meditate, exhaustion, apathy, disinclination or listlessness towards work, and on it goes. Suicide rates go up by 20%. Heart attacks go up by 50% when these positive ion winds blow through in certain regions of the globe. And these are natural.
Who documents that?
That was done by the Swiss Meteorological Institute in 1974.
Wow.
These types of winds are typical and have been around since the times of Alexander the Great. People have been getting headaches and things. That's a natural occurrence.
Mm-hmm. And it can be scientifically correlated to this atmospheric phenomena.
Yes. In over 5,000 studies, they've documented the same thing over and over again. Even the FAA had shown that air traffic control towers were low in negative ion ratios, and if the level drops below 500 ions per cubic centimeter, and normally you're dealing with about 500 to 3,000 on an average indoor environment.
Same thing with submarine crews.
And every submarine since, I think, 1956 has had negative ion generators put on them, and every bridge of every U.S. Navy ship has negative ion generators put on there as well.
Hmm.
And the reason for that is to keep the crews alert and awake at nighttime. The submarines are a little different story. In a closed environment, you have to have something like that to pull the oils out of the air.
Still, all
air flows.
Still, all said, though, really, gentlemen, it's still a kind of marginal effect that you're talking about. Whereas when we're talking about the full effect of HAARP, there have been some claims made that would extend way past a sort of marginal effect.
I think what you're talking about is the potential to weaponize.
Yes, sir.
Such a system.
Yes, that's it. Exactly.
Well, weaponize. There's a potential or to weaponize just about anything. I don't think that's the goal.
No.
Of HAARP.
No.
Or any of the other affiliated programs.
Well, certainly.
At least not what I've seen.
Certainly an ICBM defense would be considered a weaponization of sorts.
Well, actually, that's a countermeasure.
It's
a countermeasure. That's not a weapon.
Well,
there's a difference between ECMs and CMs.
Yeah, but that's the argument that Ronald Reagan made, that difference,
God bless him.
Right?
Good president. Best years of my life. God bless him.
Yes. Well, let's talk about Fort Greeley.
Okay.
Fort Greeley is right in the middle of HAARP and High Pass and Poker Flat. And just about everyone out there knows that it's not the official reason for it being there is a ballistic missile defense of the continental United States. And just about everyone knows that it's not there for that. It's there to protect HAARP, High Pass, and this potential FEPA system that's up there. Those are your primary missile defense systems. And if anything comes in under that umbrella, Fort Greeley's there to stop it. Fort Greeley is a phalanx system for HAARP.
Has there been an actual test? I mean, anti-ballistic missile systems that we have been tested with some degree of failure and some degree of luck in, you know, anti-CBM type things. So I would think that if you're making the claim that HAARP isn't a defense against ICBMs, they would have tested that. Have they?
Oh, I believe they've probably done that without anyone's knowledge. It wouldn't be a difficult thing to do.
The only testing I'm aware of has taken place in cooperation with White Sands and some activity down at Kwajalein, on the Kwajalein Atoll. But
well, if we had an effective ICBM defense, courtesy of HAARP, then why do we need to continue to try and perfect anti-ballistic missiles?
Because there's a new missile that the Russians have designed that basically goes up and makes a 90-degree turn and flies in under the ionosphere. It's a ballistic missile,
oh.
But it doesn't actually go ballistic. It doesn't go outside the ionosphere and back in again.
Oh, really?
And the only way to stop that would be a low-level nuke.
Yeah.
Knockout. But if we use a low-level nuke, that knocks out all the communications in the northern hemisphere.
Yes.
So that's verboten. Can't do that. Unless you have a backup system like ELF.
Well, some of us would complain that communication is being knocked out by HAARP anyway, right now.
I haven't seen any data to that effect, Art.
Probably not.
I haven't seen it.
I just bet you haven't.
No, I haven't seen it.
Uh-huh. Well, something certainly is affecting the ionosphere, and it's one of with the HAARP stated goals.
Guy and I talked about that but just before we went to break.
Yes.
And you had mentioned something about the red skies. Guy, let's go into that area.
Well, I mentioned a story I had about the Columbia crew prior to their burning up in the atmosphere having actually captured on video one particular frame of a big portion of our sky lighting up red, not associated with a sprite or an elf or anything like that. This was some new phenomena.
Guy,
of the atmosphere just turning red. Hello?
Yeah, but I think your
Guy,
guest,
I think it, you need to...
Your guest last night who had told you, but I think that's where you found out about it.
No, I have this. I have the story.
Okay, someone had gone onto my website because I had posted this up last week on the Superforce site on our paper that refers to the space shuttle and the Columbia accident. And we had a couple of years ago theorized that because the shuttle was flying through from dusk to dawn, or the dusk to dawn current sheet, meaning we had the shuttle flying from darkness into daylight, at about that time, it started to experience the major problems. Now, I'm not saying that a hole in the wing from liftoff wasn't the damage, but definitely there looks to be a different problem there, and we had theorized that it could have been one of these high-altitude lightning sources. Well,
all right.
Columbia Accident Investigation Board looked at this and said, we've never seen this event ever in any of the materials we've ever looked at, having a high-altitude lightning charge without a thundercloud present.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, the same shuttle mission that crashed captured this Tiger event, which is high-altitude lightning.
Yes, for the record, by the way, Guy, NewScientist.com published 19 January 2005 headline, Columbia crew saw new atmospheric phenomena. Gentlemen,
yep.
Hold on. We'll be right back. From the high desert in the middle of the night. Yes, we're harping on it a bit. This is a really, you know, it's not just cute baby cheeks, happy frogs and crops and stuff. It's the whole world we're talking about here. Okay, let's rock.
With a tear in every room, all I want's the love you promised beneath the haloed moon. But you think I should be happy with your money and your name, and hide myself in sorrow while you play your cheating game.
With Art Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Dr. Joseph Resnick and Guy Kramer are my guests, and I think it's safe to say they just might know a whole lot more than they're saying. But, on the other hand, they've said a lot I didn't know.
Are you looking?
It's always a bit of a challenge to get callers on with two guests at once, but we'll give it a try here. Dr. Joseph Resnick and Guy Kramer are here, both well-credentialed to be speaking about HAARP, and we've been doing a lot of that, lots and lots and lots of questions about HAARP. Gentlemen, welcome back.
Thank you, Art. Pleasure to be back.
Good morning.
Good morning. All right. Bill in Knoxville, Tennessee asks straight out, do chemtrails have anything to do with HAARP? You know, you both know, if you've listened to this program at all, what chemtrails are allegedly.
Mm-hmm.
They're particles dispersed by aircraft, one way or the other. To your knowledge, is there any interaction, either real or theoretical, between HAARP and these particles?
I don't even know if there's such a thing as chemtrails myself, other than the exhaust effluents that come off the back of engines, and I studied that for years myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say, I would give it a big no, that even if there was, I wouldn't think that HAARP would require anything to get where it needs to get.
The theory being, I guess, that HAARP would be able to radiate hard enough to have an interaction with these chemicals, whatever they are. And so, that was, I guess, the spirit of the question, whether there were any chemicals being dispersed to interact with HAARP.
I'd like to speak to that, if I may.
You may.
First, I'd like to say hi to Bill in Knoxville, and that Knox rocks. And finally, absolutely not. HAARP would have no impact on that I'm aware of. Couldn't. Frequency ranges are all wrong.
Uh-huh. Is there anything so potentially dangerous, or in fact dangerous, about HAARP that either one of you are aware of that, in your mind, you believe it should be banned?
not harp itself.
Now, that's a qualifier, if I ever heard one. So.
I would say these rainmaking devices, because they're operating at surface level, and because people are so influenced by different ion ratios, that those themselves should be banned. That's an area I think we're playing with that we don't want to know the outcome of that. We don't want to do the research with working devices out there on a general population where this stuff hasn't really been tested before. In the case of HARP, it's a required defense tool. Nowadays, you have to have it. And before 9/11, my view on something like HARP was quite different. My view has changed now.
I see.
Let's digress for a second. You touched on Iowa, again, the rainmaking thing.
Yes.
I had some experience and have someone in my association who had defected from the Soviet Union. And he knew we had a conversation about the Iowa and rainmaking. To sum it all up, his response was he rolled up his sleeve, asked me if I wanted to buy a Rolex. So I got his point.
Yeah.
I got his point.
Yeah. Okay. In fact...
So I think that, you know, to assuage some of Guy's concerns and listeners' concerns, I would have to disagree with the fundamental fear that Guy feels in this matter. I don't think it's a reality.
Okay. So nothing that either one of you are aware of that in your mind should have HARP disassembled and never fooled with again, banned?
No, it should be operational.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It should be operational, but there was some kind of butt in there somewhere.
Not for me.
No, it sounded like a sort of qualified. Okay. So HARP's just spiffy, huh?
When you're on the right side of the fence, you wouldn't want to be an adversary.
No, you definitely don't want to be on the wrong side of this.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, it's things like that make it sound like a weapon. You know,
Art, you know,
that's like being on the wrong side of a 50 caliber machine gun. You don't want to be on the wrong side of that either, and for the same reasons, right?
Well, let me get philosophical here, if I may.
Okay, sure, why not?
Americans are not we're not an aggressive lot. We're a friendly lot.
Oh.
But if you put us in a corner, and if we had to use something like this, if something like HARP existed or one of the other systems existed, then you'd use it. End of story. That's not to say it exists, but if we had to use something like this, and if it didn't exist, we would bring it into existence, and it would exist, and we'd use it, probably.
That's pretty philosophical, all right.
And it's theoretical.
What was your comment about the sledgehammer there, Joe?
All right. I'm going to let some of the audience ask questions. That would be all right.
Sure.
Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Guy Kramer and Dr. Resnick. Hello. Hello there, Wildcard Line. Are you there?
Yes, I have a question for the good doctor.
Okay, go ahead and yell into the phone.
Okay, I will. I'm running the internet right now at the same time.
Oh, well, just concentrate on this.
Okay. The doctor may not be able to answer this question, but maybe your other speaker will. The HARP project, and from what you've been saying, if I understand you right, blows holes through the ionosphere.
Yes.
Me being a student of earth science and also an electrician, I've read quite a bit about the high-energy laser that's located in New Mexico, and he happened to just mention New Mexico, and I'm actually wondering, although it's maybe classified, if punching those holes in there would allow that high-energy laser to zap geosynchronous satellites. And I've never heard that question raised before.
Well, now it has been. Thank you very much. Boys, that's what happens when we try this. It does something really weird to the phones.
I'm sure I heard that.
That's really strange.
Came in and came out.
But he...
Probably harped us.
Okay, so what do you say to that? Is there a classified angle to that and you can't talk about it?
Well, I can speak to the laser in New Mexico. The laser is completely experimental in nature, and that's part of another initiative that is in the public domain, by the way, that's used to track potential penetrations into the atmosphere with regard to biologicals, that sort of thing. And imagine if there's a similar system in D.C. that goes out about 300 miles. It's constantly. In fact, it's right near the Jefferson Memorial.
And what does it do?
It constantly scans the skies for intrusions such as biologicals, those sorts of things. And I don't think that that kind of laser, particularly with regard to the caller mentioned in New Mexico, that's not the purpose. That's not an offensive weapon. That's a monitoring system.
And getting a laser through the ionosphere, I mean, there was that shuttle experiment years ago where they beamed the laser onto the cockpit window of the shuttle.
Let me digress just for a second, Art, with regard to the caller's inquiry and that laser system. In last month's issue of National Defense Magazine, it's put out by the NDIA, which I'm a life member, by the way, there's a nice article in there that talks about the defense system over D.C. that uses that exact same system. So you can go to NDIA's website, ndia.org, and do a little homework, and you can find out more about that. It's not an offensive weapon. It's a defense mechanism.
A defensive weapon.
No, it's not a weapon. It's a mechanism. It's a defense.
Hey, it was your word.
It's an observation tool.
Yeah,
Let's qualify that.
East
Thank
of the Rockies, you're on the air with Guy Kramer and Dr. Joseph Resnick. Hello.
Everybody calls me Joe, Art.
Okay.
All right.
Hi. Where are you calling from, sir? Ma'am. Whoever.
Bob.
Bob, and where are you, Bob?
Mansfield, Ohio.
I beg your pardon?
Mansfield, Ohio.
Okay. You have a question.
A question is that if you have a dissociation or incomplete combustion of gases in the upper atmosphere, this could result in solid carbon atoms, which when they're dispersed would just be a colloidal dispersion. But if the HARP were to ionize that region, it would cause them, just like in a liquid, to flocculate and come down as strings or large twisted strings of carbon. And this would be evidenced as a increase in precipitation like on the West Coast or the East Coast this week.
Affecting the weather, you're saying?
Yes, sir.
Uh-huh. That's with the assumption that the output of the HARP system was outputting at a particular frequency that could enable such a phenomenon to present itself. I don't think that's possible.
You don't?
No, sir. I don't think it's possible.
And again,
the frequencies, Guy, I don't think the frequency's high enough to do that. With my understanding of the hydrocarbon and carboxyl chains and the composition, even as the caller points out, marginal combustion had not taken place. What he's alluding to is the trails and possible contrails and excitation.
Yes.
That the same call, the former caller had queried. That's the same incident. You're not able to, with this marginal HARP system, output frequency levels enough to cause an excitation to combust that those particulates.
Once again, though, what I had heard is that they're using combinations of very low frequencies, and then, of course, you're left with, we all know, the sum and the difference of those frequencies when they beat against each other to achieve a frequency that otherwise would never be prolific at that point in the ionosphere.
Mark, one of my areas of expertise has to do with EMF, electromotive force weaponry and emitter systems.
Yes, sir.
And in 25 years, I have not seen or been able to reduce to practice in any of the laboratories that I've been in multiple phases within the ELF spectrum. Now, it's not to say someone else is not doing it. If they're doing it, I haven't seen it.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably possible.
How compartmentalized is the whole HARP project?
Art, let me speak to this guy, if I might, just for a minute. Guy has some insights into this, too. I've mentioned a number of times the various agencies. At my last count, there were 13 agencies involved in this. So it's compartmentalized. For example, years ago I was working on a project, and I think I talked about this earlier. By the time I realized what I was doing, it was already
exactly
done and declassified, and it was like the Oldsmobile.
Right,
gone.
Right.
So, you know, if it is something happened, if it does exist now, in 10 years, it's, you know, you'll find it in Kmart. the way it happens.
Yes. So we're only left to guess about where they actually might be today, what they're actually doing. If you could wipe away all the compartmentalization and get to the very core of what HAARP is up to on all fronts, we're just guessing, right?
Oh, definitely. The only thing that we can pick up is shortwave radio to find out when it's turned on and when it's turned off.
Oh, and we can sure do that.
Yeah.
Have you gentlemen, you know, I just don't know where you are with respect to the HAARP project itself. In other words, are either one of you, for example, involved in the ongoing current HAARP project?
I mentioned earlier, the limit of my involvement rests in the two patents that are in the public domain.
Okay, so that's saying you have no current involvement, or your current involvement is limited to those...
I have no knowledge of anything other than what's in the public domain. I wish I did. If I did, I would certainly interject that into the conversation.
I don't know about that. If it was in the public domain, perhaps, but you're having to be very careful here. So are you having... Let's try it this way. If you were involved in the current HAARP project, would you be able to say so?
Yes. I think we're all involved in the HAARP project, in a sense, in that our tax dollars support such efforts.
Uh-huh. Just in case you never have... here is one example, or I'm going to try to provide one example in a moment of HAARP. I've got it here somewhere. Maybe I can't. Maybe I can find it. Maybe I can't. I don't know. But if I can find it, I'll play it for you, gentlemen.
Okay.
Have you ever heard HAARP?
I've heard it.
You've heard it?
Yeah. I pick it up on shortwave all the time.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's because it's up there all the time. Is the current schedule of HAARP transmissions published?
The current schedule doesn't mean anything.
You can go to the website.
Wait a minute. I want to follow up on what Guy said. The current schedule, you just said, doesn't mean anything. Isn't that what you said?
Well, I mean, if they're using it 24 hours a day for reasons of submarine communication, it's going to be going 24 hours a day on certain frequencies.
That's a good point.
Don't forget the oxygen cycles, too. You have oxygen cycles up there every 72 hours, so you never know.
Is there any reason for the American people to fear anything at all that HAARP does, ever?
My first response would be no.
No, huh?
My first response would be, ever's a long time. Presently, I see no problem. At least what I'm exposed to.
And at these power levels, at three, they're really at, you know for sure, they're at the 3 billion watt level?
No, we don't know that
for certain.
I had heard that they were up to or getting very close to full capacity.
Uh-huh.
That's reported on the website. That's all a matter of public record.
All right, very good. Let us continue with the public. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Guy Kramer and Dr. Joseph Resnick. Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
This is Ann in New Mexico, KKOB.
Hello. Yes, Ann.
An interesting conversation. What really blew me away was that the site in Alaska is basically disinformation, quote-unquote, and it's the steerage. Now, Art, remember you interviewed Will Thomas about a year ago?
Yes, ma'am. Yes.
And he mentioned that the whole facility was sold to BAE Systems, which in turn is owned by Rokar International out of Jerusalem, Israel. Do you suppose the steerage is coming out of there? And also, are they trying to open portals?
Well, there's a wild one. Open portals.
You mean time portals?
Yeah, I think something like that. Time portals or dimensional portals or something like that.
You know, that's an interesting question. I haven't seen that.
You haven't seen it?
I haven't seen it, no.
Okay.
But I'm not, on the other hand...
That's an interesting answer.
I'm on the other hand, let's not discount that possibility.
Oh?
I wouldn't discount that possibility.
Then I'll discount it.
Okay, one discount, one non-discount, and one international line on the air.
Guy, then let me offer a touche, because I've discounted you a few times tonight.
The Israeli connection, I'd heard in the grapevine that Israel had a heater array, secret heater array, but oh. I've heard no follow-up, no confirmation on that, and I have no knowledge that HAARP is in any way, shape, or form being used or run by the Israelis.
All right, very quickly, international line, you're on the air.
Yes, Art. This is Ed calling from Bermuda.
Yes, Bermuda.
Yeah, man, it's real nice out here. I got a little fishing boat that I have out here and take tourists out and try to make a little living here.
Well, great to hear from Bermuda. We don't frequently hear from Bermuda, so great. Ask a quick question because we're...
Okay, I was curious how this place that supposedly does not exist, how do they camouflage it where you cannot see it from 60 feet up? I just can't understand that.
All right. Maybe the answer will help you out. Gentlemen?
Guy?
Fractal camouflage. Feedback loop.
Fractal camouflage. Feedback.
Yes. Fractal basically is a design that simulates itself in different scales. And so from far away, you'll get the same scale as you will close up. And in the case of the camouflage that we've been working on for the Department of Interior, Bureau of Land Management,
yes,
we are using these fractals.
All right. Gentlemen, hold on. Guy Kramer and Dr. Joseph Resnick, and we've been talking about some pretty exotic stuff. HAARP. And actually a lot more from the high desert in the middle of the night, which is where we do our business. A little different than other networks you might hear on the American airwaves. This is Coast to Coast AM, Top of the Darkness.
With Art Bell, call the wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
And Guy Kramer and Dr. Joseph Resnick. It's up to all of you to decide how much of what you're hearing is the real McCoy, where little nuggets of truth might blossom into full hydrogen bomb-sized bits of truth. And where not. It's kind of hard to tell sometimes, and I'll have a question about all that in a moment. this is a straight-out question to both Dr. Resnick and Guy. Gentlemen, would you, if you thought it was the patriotic thing to do, give out disinformation?
I'd have to say yes if the opportunity, if I felt it was, if it was a necessity.
And that is Dr. Resnick saying that?
Art, let me put it to you this way. I can report only historical information. I'm in the business of factual.
Yeah, I know.
If I can't weigh it, cut it, or slice it, then I'm a real suspect of it.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm the kind of guy, I may BS you a little bit, but I never tell you a lie. And what I tell you, take it to the bank.
I need to add to that I am a Canadian citizen. And when we say patriotic, I'm talking about Canada.
Well, okay. That's
maybe if you posed the question a little differently.
I thought it was posed just fine. If you thought that it was a patriotic thing to do, would you give out disinformation? Very straightforward.
No, sir, I would not.
And that's a good straightforward answer. Okay. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Dr. Resnick and Guy Kramer. Hello.
Yes, my name is Josh.
Hey, Josh.
I used to operate a phased array radar, and I wanted to know the definition of phased array.
Okay. Anybody want to tackle the definition of phased array?
Guy. No, go ahead, Joe.
Okay. Phased array, you have an array of antenna. You want a technical definition, or do you want a drawing?
I think drawing wouldn't be possible. This is radio.
Well,
so.
The best way, go to... Best thing to do, go to the internet.
Uh-huh.
Look it all up.
Can you give us a audio description of what a phased array is?
Yes, I can.
Okay.
Phased array is a system that works in conjunction with multiple array antenna, such as the ones at Poker Flats. Some of them operate in the various frequency ranges. At 70 to 150. What else do you want to know?
Okay, so it's a multiple antenna array phased together for a specific purpose. Now, it's our understanding that the purpose in the case of HARP is that unlike all radio, as a ham radio operator or as a terrestrial broadcaster, television, radio, it doesn't matter. These signals start out single source point pretty much, and they go out in almost all directions with some rare specific exceptions, or even not so rare. We have directional radio stations and so forth. But basically, they want to cover as much territory. They start off small and get big. In the case of HARP, you start off big on the ground and get small. So you end up with a very tiny little area of intense concentration of incredible power at the ionospheric level.
Now, actually, the way a phased array antenna system works, the gentleman that called, he said he's an operator. Then he would know that the phased array antenna system, and this will get back to what Guy had imparted earlier, phases shifts of signals, and these are transmitted from individual elements.
Mm-hmm.
In such a way that they can be steered. That's the phased array.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned it takes three of these large arrays.
I mentioned that.
Yeah, I should add to that when HARP is active in certain modes, you will find two other signals in that narrow area that are operating on the same frequency. Those are two different antennas. That's not all coming from HARP.
Okay.
That's right.
By the way, just to get back to it, I did find it. Listen carefully. There's your baby at work. There's one signal from HARP, recorded by another amateur radio operator. Listen carefully. By the way, this was recorded at about 2.3 megahertz. That's one. This is another. And then there's the third, and I think for some reason with me, the most concerning. Isn't that interesting? Listen to those combination of frequencies that they're achieving, and it goes through other shifts as the audio signal continues, so I won't burden you with more of it. It's weird stuff. There's no question. Now, what do you suppose what we were just hearing was intended to achieve, gentlemen?
Well, the name of the array that the DoD says they canceled is Frequency Independent Phased Array Antenna, and the name indicates it's frequency independent. Those noises are definitely the same ones I'm hearing on my shortwave radio.
Yes, it's there. I was just wondering, the question was, what do you think those sounds were intended to do?
I have no idea other than what we've been discussing over the past couple hours here.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm not sure those are genuine.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. Yes, that's HARP. At least that's what's being at times transmitted by HARP. I guarantee you that is HARP.
Well, HARP publicly puts on their website their the frequency that they use.
That's right.
In the shortwave radio, you can turn to that frequency, and that's the noise that you get.
That's right. There are several frequencies in use. Early on, they enlisted hams in monitoring their signal. That was very early, a very early test, just sort of the beginning of the antenna system, but they're well beyond all that now. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Guy Kramer and Dr. Joseph Resnick.
Yes.
Hello.
Yes. Yes, good evening. This is John in New Orleans.
Hi, John.
Yes, sir, gentlemen. Gee, what a treat and a real true Sunday with a cherry on top.
Thanks, John.
Ever since I first heard of HARP, and then I learned how to spell it, I've been running in my head, Joshua fought the Battle of Jericho, and the walls came tumbling down.
Yeah.
So in my mind, true or not, I'm just the kid at the kids' table over here on Thanksgiving, the small one. Y'all are at the adult table. But is it not the bottom line of HARP? Other uses maybe, but the bottom line being that weapon to bring down the walls and structures of any enemy, and the byproduct being the way it treats the animals, including the human animals, as you spoke of earlier, you know, physically incapacitating them. So the structures and the humans.
Okay. Who wants that one?
Guy?
Thanks, Joe. In the case of people, I don't think we're there yet where we can actually incapacitate a person with HARP at any kind of a distance. I may be totally wrong about that, but my knowledge of a system like this would be that it can influence positive ions, and that'll have some effect on people, but it's not going to put everyone to sleep in NORAD in the middle of Colorado.
Uh-huh. Is the HARP facility itself safe for people to be at, or is it operated remotely for a reason?
Well, if you look at the pictures on the website, on the Superforce site,
mm-hmm.
Of HARP, you'll see there's an aircraft radar very close proximity to the aircraft alert radar, they call it, very close proximity to the array. The reason for that is you do not want a plane flying within that that signal.
Right.
And they will shut down that signal if a aircraft comes in close proximity. That is about the only danger that you would have in the area.
The implication being what for the airplane should it fly into the...
You'd probably fry most of the electrical components on the aircraft.
You would upset... You may cause an electrical anomaly to occur. I don't think that fry is necessarily the correct terminology here.
Well, at 3 billion watts.
That's assuming. No, the question was an operation was not an operational system. The question was flying over the phased array network.
Well, they do, in fact, as Guy mentioned, have a...
There's a no-fly zone.
Yes, and if a plane, we're speculating, if a plane did go through it, what the actual physical effect upon the airplane would be. And I thought the term fry under these conditions might not be all that far from what would happen. You have a disagreement, you two, on this? You don't like the word fry, Doctor?
Well, I wouldn't, even if
fry
I
is a little
agreed
bit
with
extreme,
Dr. Resnick, I wouldn't attempt it myself.
So you think fry is, well, sounds harsh.
I think that's an overstatement. I don't think fry. Hey, listen, there's a BAA up right now for a phased array for that young guy that asked me about the definition.
Yes.
There's a broad agency announcement at the DARPA website that maybe he should take a look at. BAA 95-39.
Okay. All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Joseph Resnick and Guy Kramer. Hi.
Hey, how are you doing? My name's John. I'm calling from Los Angeles.
Okay, John, you're not real loud on the line, so you're going to have to yell at us a little.
Is that better?
Yeah, best you can do. Go ahead.
Okay. Now, I had two quick questions. The first one might be a little bit off base, but I heard a rumor that an Israeli DJ, is a musical DJ, discovered a way through sound waves and different frequencies to purify water, and that the Coca-Cola company hired him to work on this.
No, there's no way to confirm what you're saying. I haven't heard about it. I'm not saying it isn't so, but I've not heard about it. And
it's
I doubt my guests have. Have you, guests?
The only thing I've heard about Coca-Cola and water was their little fiasco in England there where they were using tap water for their bottled product, and they when that was discovered a couple months ago, they shut the process down.
Oh, okay. Well, my second question is if you guys could just explain a little bit more about fractals.
Fractals?
Yes.
Okay.
A fractal. Yeah, let's see. I'll give
guy
you,
rocks in this area.
I'll give you a simple version. If you've seen a fern, you've seen a fractal because the leaves of the fern are identical to the fern itself. And in a more complex fractal, we could zoom in on that leaf and find that there's leaves within the leaf, and on it goes. And so you have something that at different scales tends to look exactly the same as the largest object that you can see.
Huh. Isn't that something? And there goes our phone system getting crazy with us again. It does really odd things, kind of like I think HARP does. Surely you both would admit there could be unintended consequences involved in the operation of HARP. Could there not? I mean, surely the scientists cannot know every effect this is going to have, or even reasonably guess on what it might do at certain power levels and combinations of tones and such.
Well, I know with the shuttle accident taking place in the ionosphere, the comments were made over and over again that it's the ignorant sphere.
They call it the dumbest sphere.
Yeah, because we really don't understand it that well.
No one knows it.
And like Einstein says, we know 1% of 1% of 1% of all there is to know. And definitely there are things that we do in any science that have unexpected consequences out there.
And at the moment, HARP is purely experimental.
Okay, but, you know, a lot of earlier science in America and the world was more local in terms of its consequences, wasn't it? In other words, I suppose finally, of course, we got to the atomic bomb, and that became more than local. But otherwise, a lot of science is quite local in terms of unintended consequences. But here we're starting to tamper with, you know, the world's ionosphere, one whole level of our atmospheric shield or what's around our planet. We're toying with the whole thing. It's just sort of at a different level, isn't it, when you consider unintended consequences?
The same analogy could be drawn with regard to medicine in terms of gene splicing, etc.
You betcha. You betcha.
So but
that doesn't...
I would agree with you in that regard.
You would?
I would. Sure.
So that's all I'm trying to suggest, that when you're considering unintended consequences, some of the work being done, as you point out, in the medical world and now in our whole atmosphere, it's so all-encompassing. I don't know that we've ever done that before, except for that atom bomb moment. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Guy Kramer and Dr. Joseph Resnick. Hi.
Good evening, Art. This is Robert from Vancouver Island, British Columbia.
Welcome.
Hey, listen on CFUN 1410.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, listen, I have a comment to make about the power failure that occurred, which may have been related to something to do with HARP in year 2003 in August.
Okay.
What happened is that the Department of National Defense in Canada was requested by the Department of Defense in the United States to build a Tesla antenna at a communication research establishment which is just east of Ottawa. And apparently when they built this thing and tested it in August of 2003, they apparently blasted a hole through to the ionosphere, but it also caused a power surge which blew the grid for Quebec, Ontario,
yes,
and all the northeastern states. What I'm interested in knowing is if this was related to some research that they would be have been doing for HARP.
It's a fair, straight-on question. Gentlemen, as we try and get past this stupid phone thing. Okay, there we go. I've, too, heard the rumors that man just spoke about, that there may have been something HARP-related that caused that great blackout. Any comments? Anybody dare comment?
I think the reasons were actually quite simple, and other urban legends you might have heard is probably part of the disinformation process surrounding
it. Yeah, I think somebody knocked the Coke over on a control panel.
You do, huh? So you don't think HARP could have had the slightest thing to do with anything?
HARP
like
doesn't
that.
Work that way.
And is there any possibility that HARP could in any way affect power grids or the transmission of electricity over long lines?
Well, with a solar storm, we get that kind of an effect, radio blackouts and whatnot. So the potential's there.
Uh-huh. Okay. First of all, I really want to thank the both of you for saying as much as you have said and for being here tonight. And note that you, neither one of you, or they didn't put it on here anyway. I guess you don't have books to sell, right?
Nope,
you're not selling any books.
No books.
But you do have a website, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Is it actually two websites or more than two or one main one you want to send people to or what if they want to know more?
Joe's got some websites there.
Yeah, they're on your site now. If people want to go look at this stuff, feel free to visit.
This would be the superforce.com site.
So all the links that should be up there are up there.
Yes.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Is there a great deal of information on that website about HARP?
With the information discussed tonight, I believe so.
Guy's website is pretty comprehensive.
I would like to ask this, too, that if anything occurs to either one of you after the show or in the next few days or weeks or months that you want to get out about HARP, that you feel ought to be out about HARP, I would hope that you would pick up the phone, contact my producer, and, you know, let it flow from there, right?
Certainly.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Then I'm going to thank both of you for appearing on the program tonight. And it's been a pleasure having you and all that stuff, and show's over. So good night.
Good night. Thanks for having us.
Good night. Good night to everyone.
Yes, indeed. Good night. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. As I said to you earlier, it is going to be up to you in your own mind to decide whether what you just heard was the straight stuff. The straight stuff, perhaps in small nuggets, the straight or not straight stuff at all. Or whatever, but certainly we heard things about HARP tonight that I had not heard before. Quite a number of things that it's going to take me a while to digest. In the meantime, that's it. Show's over. What a weekend. Thank you so very much from the high desert. Crystal Gale with just the right words. Good night.
Midnight in the desert, shooting stars across the sky. Magical journey will take us on a ride, filled with the longing, searching for the truth. Will we make it to tomorrow? Will the sun shine on you?